space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
six, five, four, three, two, one, zero. Blast off!
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Mad Science. But before we get into Mad Science, I always like to try to keep my word to people, you know. And there's a friend of mine out there, Gary. He posted a song for me to play last time the Knights of the Round Table was on. And I wasn't able to get to it because I didn't see the message till it was too late. But nonetheless, this one here goes out to Gary. So I'm going to play this real quick, and then we'll get into some rowdiness on the Mad Science Show. Stay tuned. Peace and love.
set upon an argument. I believe we place our happiness in other people's hands. I believe the junk food tastes so good because it's bad for you. I believe your parents did the best job they knew how to do. I believe that beauty magazines promote low self-esteem. I believe in love when I'm completely by myself alone. I believe in karma, what you give is what you get returned. I believe you can appreciate real love till you've been burned. I believe the grass is no more greener on the other side. I believe you don't know what you've got until you say goodbye. I believe you can't control or choose your sexuality. I believe that trust is more important than monogamy. I believe your most attractive features are your heart and soul. I believe that family is worth more than money or gold. I believe that struggle for financial freedom is unfair. I believe the only one to disagree, a millionaire. I believe in karma, what you give is what you get returned. I believe you can appreciate real life till you've been burned. I believe the grass is no more green. Is the key to your unhappiness. I believe that wedded bliss negates the need to be undressed. I believe that God does not endorse TV evangelists. I believe in love surviving death into eternity. I believe in karma, what you give is what you get returned. I believe you can appreciate.
Awesome song. Gary's got good taste in music. I tell you what, folks, always keep your word to your friends. That's a cool thing. Always keep your word to everybody, you know, no matter what. But anyway, might have to get a little rowdy today because mad science is just that. It's mad science. Why would I keep on calling it mad science all the time? Well, it's blatantly obvious that when we have the science and the technology to resolve issues in the world, and you just sit back idly by and watch as everything just deteriorates before your very eyes, it gets frustrating. There's a place called Olathe, Kansas. And in Olathe, Kansas, they, like many other people, they do recycling. Now, if you've been listening in on my radio shows and maybe watching my YouTube channel or something like that, you might see that I was doing a Bottle Caps for Mad Science campaign, wherein I was going to show people something that you could do with bottle caps and make an attempt to fund my research so that I can do alternative energy for, you know, the world. Well, In Olathe, Kansas, they have literally told their recyclers, the people that recycle, to not put bottle caps, take the bottle caps off the bottle before they recycle the bottle. So essentially, the bottle caps go right directly in the trash, which go directly into the landfill. So there's a very valuable resource being completely and utterly wasted, going out into the landfill, basically plugging up a hole, I guess. And so with that said, it's really frustrating, because you gotta have participation if you're going to get solutions enacted. You know, some people like to say, well, you gotta provide solutions. Well, we've been providing solutions on the Mad Science Show and the Knights of the Round Table for so long, but if people aren't proactive, if they're not involved, then those solutions are just, you know, just words in digital cyberspace. They're just ideas. They're not something that, you know, is actually going to be beneficial. I'm going to play a few podcasts about plastic, but I hope that you bear with me and stick in there, because there are solutions to all this. You know, and it really frustrates me. It really makes me angry, because no matter who you talk to, most generally, it's the who cares, you know? It's not my problem. Oh, I recycle. Of course you recycle. Yeah, you put plastic in the recycling bin if you live in Olathe, Kansas, but you also throw a valuable resource in the garbage, which ends up in the landfill. And then some of your recycling doesn't even make it to the recycling plant. It just goes on down by the wayside, gets sent over to, you know, other countries, and, you know, becomes their problem. Well, you know, who cares? Do you care? Why should you care? It's not your problem. It's not your problem that, you know, there are rivers out there that are so incredibly polluted that, you know, fish are dying and wildlife are dying. It doesn't matter. You know, hey, it's a cycle of life, right? Well, no, that ain't right. The fact is, we're wasting valuable resources on a regular basis that could quite literally solve the so-called energy problem that they say we have, which we do not have. You know, regardless of all the propaganda you've been getting from either the mainstream media or even the alternative media for that matter, even the so-called college-educated of the world, you know, it boggles my mind how people can claim to be really educated and they care about the planet and all this kind of stuff, and you know, that just because they do the little bitty bit of putting the stuff inside the, you know, a little recycling bin, once it leaves their house, you know, it's, hey, they done their thing, right? Yeah, that's it. Everybody done their thing. Well, the system's broken, folks. I mean, if you got tons and tons of garbage out in the oceans and the rivers, then the system's broken. You know, and even that trash that's out there in the oceans could be, you know, reclaimed. But will it just reclaim itself? No. There are a lot of people out there that are actually trying to make a difference, and they're trying to get the trash up off the oceans and the beaches and out the rivers and stuff like that. But it's not something that, you know, one small group of individuals can do by themselves. You know, myself, I'm just one guy, and my main subject is alternative energy, you know, science. I'm trying to show people how to get what they said they wanted, clean, renewable, alternative energy. I'm trying to show them more efficient ways in order to use energy so that, you know, we can basically save our planet. That's what they said. That's what they said they wanted. And even the governments of the world, they said that's what they wanted, right? You're always hearing about we got to become sustainable. We can't never become sustainable without you, without everybody and his brother helping to clean up the mess that mankind has, you know, perpetrated upon nature. You know, we're lost. I can't do it all myself. I'm just one guy. I can get on here and talk, and if I don't get participation, even in this right here, you know, it becomes a failure. You know, I just, I'm basically talking to myself at some point. You know, what's the point? You know, The people that really matter as far as how to get things done, the people that actually have the funding for research or, you know, are able to get in front of large audience and talk, you know, that's not me. You know, I don't have those resources. I don't have the access to get in front of the Senate and the Congress and, you know, the people that make the laws and regulations and all that. Heck, I can't even get on to talk to doggone celebrity hosts like, you know, maybe Tucker Carlson out there on Fox News. I'd love to talk to him because some of the things that he talked about, homelessness, there's ways to solve that as well. But if nobody, you know, is able to contact nobody, we have a communication gap between us and the so-called elitist of the world, what's the point? You know, who cares? Ted, call in. So, anyway, so all I'm saying is I want to do my part. I want to help fix the world. You know, so I guess I'm one person who cares. And I know there's other people out there that care. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to paint with a wide brush and bash everyone around. You know, I got a type of message in there. Ted wants to call in. It'd be a good to have him in there. Yeah, I'm just going to say, yep. That's in a smiley face. That'll work. All right. So I'm on a roll here. So anyway, so there are solutions to all the problems that we got. But getting the information in the right hands. You know, I'd love to stand before Congress. I'd love to have a bit of time to talk to them or the Senate. And I'd love to have a chance to say what I say to each and every one of you. You know, I talk to some pretty wealthy people in my life. All right? And they're pretty much under the impression that, you know, there ain't nothing you can do about it. Or, you know, it's not possible or whatever. For whatever reason, you know, folks just don't seem to, once it's in that little recycling bin, they don't seem to think that it's any more of an issue now. Hey, you know, everybody's going about their life just like, you know, every day. I go to work, you know, I do my thing, I take care of my family, out of sight, out of mind, it ain't my problem. Well, unfortunately, yeah, it is. It is your problem. It's everybody's problem. And mostly it's going to be the future generation's problem. You know, I'm not a doomsdayer. I'm not one to sit around and say that, you know, we're all doomed. But on the road that we're on, you know, environmental-wise, we got some issues. We got some serious issues that need to be resolved in short order. Otherwise, we're just basically going to watch as this world gets worse. Now, there are countries out there. There are communities out there that make a living off of trash. I mean, the whole town, that's what they do, is that they recycle. And they found creative ways in order to do it. But maybe if we got control of it before it ever even got to the trash, maybe we could, you know, resolve the issue. You know, it's still going to take some cleanup because there's still a bunch of plastic in the oceans and the water and stuff like that. It's still going to take some effort. But you know, you start now, and before it's all said and done, everybody doing their part, we can resolve the issue. Otherwise, the planet gets trashed. You know, I've put out the call, I don't know how many times, over and over and over again. I put out the call here on Mad Science for environmentalists. They never showed up. I put out the call for any politician. They never showed up. I put out the call for any news media, alternative or mainstream media. They never showed up. Who cares? It's not their problem. That, you know, who am I? I'm just a guy, you know, a loud mouth getting on a microphone and shouting out, you know, sounding like a know-it-all. You know, I know it all, right? No, unfortunately I don't. But I know enough that we could sit there and start to fix things that are broken. You know, but if we can't get no help, then we can't do it. You know, I keep saying this, and I don't know why I even bother, but, you know, I got a YouTube channel. It supposedly has 8,700 subscribers. Never once had a video that went anywhere past a few hundred views except for one that, or two that had the word redneck attached to it. Maybe I should attach redneck to everything. You know, maybe that's what I should do. And put redneck this and that on every single thing. Maybe I'll get some attention. I don't know. Seems like you got to do something ridiculous to get attention. But if you want to try to fix the world, you know, it's not like that. It's not as easy as you think. It's really seriously hard to do what it is that I'm trying to do. You know? And who cares? It's not my problem. You know? It's not your problem. You know, you got your life. Everybody's got their life. Everybody's got issues. People's got their own health problems and stuff like that. But it don't matter which subject that we're on, whether it be health industry, food industry, you know, anything. Yeah, energy industries, even in recycling, don't matter. It's all the same thing. You know, you got ideas. Ideas are just ideas until they're acted upon, until you actually want to get up and do something about, you know, homelessness. There's always going to be homelessness. Until you want to get up and do something about cleaning up the planet, that planet's always going to be trashed. Now, I'm going to play this first podcast, but you know, sort of disagree with some of the points in there about how many years that trash I actually live in the dumps, but you know, I'm not going to argue semantics with people. The fact is that there is trash out there. It's all over the place. But I'm going to play this one right here. Listen to what this lady says. I'm just going to play it live right here. So maybe I can jump in and log off.
I don't know about you, but I like our planet a lot. And one of the easiest ways we can help protect the Earth is by recycling. That's where, instead of throwing things like plastic in the trash, you put them in a special bin so they go to a kind of factory to be reused. You've probably recycled things like plastic bottles before. There might even be a recycling bin in the room you're in right now. Recycling is important because it helps keep the Earth clean, especially from trash made of plastic. That's a good question. People are always talking about how important it is to recycle plastic, but Squeaks wants to know why plastic is such a problem in the first place. Why do we recycle things made of plastic, but it's not...
Well, first, before you even get anywhere past all that, first you got to figure out whether or not your system is actually broken. You know, actually do a little bit of research into where your recyclables go, and it's going to get you frustrated. And if you got places like old Latha, Kansas, talking about not putting your bottle caps on, at least take your bottle caps off the plastic bottles and then recycle just the bottle and throw the plastic cap in the trash, there's a valuable resource. Think about, you know, 1,000 or more households throwing a whole bunch of, you know, at least 1,000 per month doggone bottles in the trash. You know, it goes in the landfill. So, you know, when the system's broken and you see the mess that comes about, this is what this lady's getting ready to talk about.
It's important to find ways to recycle other types of materials, like wood. The main reason is that plastic is actually really new, and we use tons of it. The type of plastic we use to make stuff was invented by people only about 100 years ago. Before that, people mostly made things out of materials you can find naturally on Earth, like wood or metal. There were no plastic bottles, no plastic bags, no plastic anything. 100 years might seem like a really long time for plastic to have been around, but compared to something natural like wood that's been around for hundreds of millions of years, it's not very long at all. When plastic was first invented by scientists, people thought it was awesome because it was easy to bend into shape, didn't break easily like glass does, and could hold water without leaking. Soon, they started using it to make all kinds of things, from plastic bottles and bags to plastic chairs and pipes. But then scientists realized that there was a big problem. Plastic never really goes away, even when you throw it out. When you put something in the trash, it doesn't just disappear. It has to go somewhere. Most of the time, the garbage truck takes it to a place called a landfill, which is basically a giant hole in the ground. Once they're in a landfill, most materials that come from the earth, like wood, will soon break down into smaller and smaller pieces.
The problem is that when you put it in the dirt, and you separate that plastic away from nature's elements such as UV rays and you know, sun, all the, you know, air and the oxygen, then it can't break down. So basically, you bury it underground, it takes longer for it to to break down, but it won't last as long as they're saying that it will, but it will break down into, you know, microplastics, and so that in itself could be an issue. But all this could be resolved. So ridiculously simple, but it takes a massive scale of people who really care, you know. But from what I've seen so far, you know, I'm asking the question, who cares? It's not my problem, you know. It's not in my backyard. It's not my problem.
So they're basically gone. A wooden chair can take around 10 years to break down, and some types of clothes might only take a few months. But a plastic bottle can take almost 500 years to go away, and a plastic bag can take 1,000 years. Plastic was so useful that people were starting to make more and more things with it, especially things like plastic bottles or cups that you were only meant to use once before throwing them away. That meant there was more and more plastic trash piling up, trash that was going to stick around for hundreds of years. Even worse, plastic trash can blow away from garbage trucks or landfills and end up in the ocean. That's bad because it makes the ocean dirty and polluted when it's supposed to be nice, clean water. But it's also a problem because plastic can hurt the animals living in the ocean, like whales and fish. If they swallow too much plastic, either by accident or because they think it's food, it can kill them. They can also get trapped in things like the plastic rings that hold cans together. It is really sad, Squeaks. But now that we know plastic is such a big problem, there are things that we can do to help protect the animals and the earth. One thing people can do is try to use less plastic. For example, instead of getting a bunch of new plastic bags to carry their groceries every time they go food shopping, a lot of people decide to use paper bags or fabric bags that they can reuse. And you know what else we can do? That's right. We can recycle. When we recycle things like plastic cups and bottles, companies take the old plastic and reshape it into something new, like another bottle. That way, instead of making more and more plastic that ends up in landfills or the ocean, we can just keep using the plastic we already have. Overall, people still have a lot of work to do to make sure we aren't wasting plastic and to clean up what's already in the oceans. But by using as little plastic as we can and putting what we do use in the recycling bin, we can each do our part to help our planet. Thanks for joining us. If you want to keep learning and having fun with Squeaks and me, hit the subscribe button and we'll see you next time here at the fort.
Well, it's not as cut and dry as people like to think it is, because like I said, the system's broken between people trying to cut corners and save money or whatever. Some folks just flat out don't care. It's just it's becoming a trash planet, quite literally. We got garbage everywhere. We got people living in some terrible conditions because this stuff floats downstream. It ends up somewhere, you know. And even if it's unintentional, what happened over in Japan when they had the big tsunami that washed all kinds of garbage out to sea and stuff like that. You know, the governments, they spend a lot of money on bogus deals like climate change over there, and giving $50 million to the United Nations for climate change, whatever, fund. And, you know, it's the ridiculousness of how much money is actually wasted on projects that just don't go anywhere shows that, you know, the government's got a terrible track record. They're failing. They're failing miserably in order to try to, you know, get things done. I guess we've got the best that we can get, right? You know, and so there's nothing we can do about it. Like, what's the point? You know, why even waste time even listening or even talking about it? I tried to get people to pass messages on, and there's a lot of people who do. And I don't know what it takes. I need a voice somewhere. I need somebody who can advocate to, you know, set me in front of some council or government entities that have funding and power in order to be able to get something accomplished, to see if I can actually talk common sense into them. But the longer it takes, it gets to the point where I'm even questioning my own thoughts, whether or not, heck, is it even possible? You know, everybody I've heard talking about, you know, we're doomed. There's no way we can resolve this. And, after you hear that for a while, you start to want to think it might be the truth. know, maybe it is the truth. Maybe we're just so far past, repair that there's no way to fix it. You know, I don't believe that, but who am I to say? I'm just a dude, loud mouth on a microphone, you know, talking about mad science all the time. We got cold plasma technology that can actually turn that doggone plastic into fuel that will run generators that will produce electricity. So even every bit of trash that goes in the trash shouldn't even be going to the dump. It should be used to generate electricity. You know, there's ways of gasification techniques, technology available out there where you could actually, instead of sending your trash off to a landfill, you could recycle it or reuse it, use it for fuel. So just about everything that goes into trash will burn, you know, and the metals can be pulled out and recycled. So, you know, some people in their own homes had a particular machine, gasification style machine. Instead of, just throwing the trash in there and then the trash man picks it up, takes it to the landfill and adds to the problem, well, this doggone machine would actually turn that into fuel that would supplement your energy usage for your house, your heating and cooling. Did you realize how much trash that one household actually generates? You know, especially if you got anywhere from 5 to 10 people living in your house, that's a lot of trash. So you could take that trash and turn it into a real solution. And as far as engineering a safe, environmentally friendly gasification system, heck, that work's already been done. The knowledge is already there. It's already available. But the problem is not that we don't have the information necessary to resolve the problem. The problem is that the folks that have the funding, that have the power or the tools and the capability of actually manufacturing what is necessary for, you know, putting out there on the market, they don't care. They simply do not care. You know, and I've talked to people who believe themselves to be so incredibly educated, but to listen to them, and you try to tell them, you know, I asked this one lady here about a day or so back, I said, what do you think the biggest problem in the world is and that needs a solution? And she said, water. And I said, well, that's solved. That's not an issue. Water's not an issue. We can purify water. We can clean it up. We can pull water out of midair. We've got that technology. So now, look, what's the next problem out there? You know? But we can't even get past the drinking water portion of the deal. How are we going to get anything accomplished when nobody wants to listen to reason? I've spent a lifetime, folks, a lifetime of studying science, right? I don't have all the high-tech terminology necessary to caress the egos of the highly intellectual individuals out there that might think themselves to be smarter than me, but I'm not stupid by any means. You know, and I'm not going to sit around and pander to them because they want me to believe that they're more intelligent to me because they know all these terminologies and stuff. I'm just like you, you know. I'm just an average Joe, an average mind. I got ideas. I put them up there on the table, and for the most part, they get poo-pooed by the system. Nobody listens. You know, what am I going to do? How am I going to, you know, get my word out to the people out there to say that I got a solution here. We can fix this thing. You know, as far as efficiency, that's not a problem either. We can engineer things to be efficient. But here's the thing again. It always keeps going back to the same exact thing. It's funding. It's resources. All right. I don't have that type of resources. The only thing I've got is my voice to try to put some voices of reasons out there to the people. But I can't get through that barrier that is between me and the representation out there. I can't get between the barrier that is me and the person that has the funding. How you doing, Ted?
Is. How you been?
No, just trying to get some mad science out there. So anyway, like I was saying, I can't break that barrier down for some reason, that communication barrier to share with the, like say the President of the United States. You know, he's a, you know, he's like a protective species. You can't even talk to him unless you're lucky, you know, or something like that. He's a celebrity. I can't get a message to the Senate or the Congress. And then if I do somehow or another eat through like I did whenever I talked to, I sent a message out there to, Rick Scott, the governor of Florida, to tell him about the doggone red tide issue and how to solve that problem using real science and existing resources out there. I never got a response. You know, and if they're not willing to listen to a guy like me, because I'm nobody. Hey, I don't got the white coat. I don't got the fancy piece of paper up on the wall that says that, you know, I'm a college professor. All I've got is 53 years worth of research and everything under the sun. And so, you know, who am I to say? So, I'm sitting there, I'm trying to break down these barriers that is between me and the power structure that actually has the potential, that has the tools, that has the technology available to take these ideas and put them into real action, to real solution, to resolve problems, so that we're not going to hear about garbage in the future, because in the future, everything gets recycled. And your trash, it supplements your home energy usage. You don't even have to, you know, pay a gas bill anymore, because your trash can actually produce and store enough fuel to keep you through to the winter. So if you could actually figure out how many bags of trash that you're sending out on the curb for the trash man to haul off and shove into the landfill, some of which may not stay in the landfill. It might get in a flood and wash downstream and become somebody else's problem. But, you know, until we can somehow break that barrier between us as individuals, we the people, until we can get that communication going with all the average Joes and Janes out here, then this is always going to be an issue, because government has dropped the ball. The mainstream industries have dropped the ball. The mainstream scientists have dropped the ball. The mainstream media and the alternative media have dropped the ball. Every single environmentalist out there have dropped the ball. You know, you can't sit around and complain that there is a problem and then not be willing to listen to the solution, because the person that is offering the solution doesn't have a white coat, doesn't have a big piece of paper on the wall that says that I've been through years and years worth of college. What about the School of Hard Knocks? What about the each and every one of y'all's journey through life and all the things that you've learned, the tips and tricks and things, the how-tos that you've learned throughout your life? You know, that is education, better than you would ever get in any college indoctrination center. And so I'm asking the people of the world, you, the person listening right now, you're the one I'm asking. How are we going to break those barriers down so that our communication can sort these problems out, so that we can resolve them? Because we obviously can't get the governments to do it. But some people think, you know, once I put my stuff in the recycling bin, I've done my part, and so who cares? It's not my problem anymore. You know, it'll become future generations' problems if we don't decide we want to resolve it. I put the call out for the environmentalists. Where are they at? They're not here. They don't show up. I put the call out for the governors and the senators and the congressmen, even the town council members. I've been throwing down the gauntlet for so many years here on Mad Science and begging and pleading. Come here. Sit down at the table. Let's have a talk. Nobody shows up because they do not care. It doesn't affect them, you know. I can go to any community, doesn't matter, and I can ask them, what is the biggest problem that you have in your community? Let me help you to resolve it with the ideas that are in my mind. They'll look at me like I'm crazy. He's go, oh, that's too expensive, it costs too much. We'll have to pay somebody to pick that trash up. Well, yeah, you may have to pay somebody to pick that trash up. Right, but you can recoup your money back in the benefits of your community no longer being a dump. you can recoup your funding back via the fact that now you have a nice looking neighborhood, and that you can take this what would have been laying on the ground and turn it into a valuable resource, either make new products or make fuel to run generators or even gasification systems or even doggone storage systems to store methane from food waste or whatever. You know, and if you think about all the communities out there that have septic systems, there is an infrastructure already in place that properly utilized. You can store up natural gases from the breakdown of what's going on in that system, and then use it for a fuel resource to, you know, get off of the so-called fossil fuels and into a more, you know, biodegradable type system, if you understand what I'm trying to say. So I could go on around and around for days and days about this stuff, but I got to have help. I got to have somebody out there willing to, you know, point somebody who has some sort of pull in a committee or a community or, you know, environmentalist group, and have them hear what I have to say, you know? Otherwise, I'm just talking out the side of my neck, you know? I'm wasting my time, and I don't like wasting my time, because I'm sitting here, I see the world's in trouble, and I'm like, hey, you know, I'm here, I'm ready to pitch in, I'm going to take my brain, and I'm going to help you out with everything that I've researched all my life. That's what I do here at Mad Science. And that's why I call it Mad Science, because it's frustrating when you can't get common sense and solutions to start moving. There are people out there recycling. There are people who make a living off of other people's garbage. There are tons and tons of doggone factories and companies and organizations who generate tons and tons and tons of recyclable materials. They're going to go out and cut down 1,000 more trees because we need some 2x4s. My God, you could take that doggone wood and you could recycle it. You could remold it. We have the technology to make really super strong materials. We have the technology to take all this garbage, build housing for the homeless, and build things that will not end up in landfills. And you don't have to keep on making brand new plastic. You don't have to keep on raping the planet for resources when you've already got enough resources available in every type of material that you can possibly think about. But you know what? There's a highly educated is going to argue. So, how you doing there, Ted?
I'm doing good, Shaziz.
I'm on a rant. I'm on a ramble. I'm on a soapbox. I'm getting rowdy.
That's good. That's good. I like that.
I'm just trying to find a way to get the people motivated to fix the mess that they said they were worried about. So what do you think, man?
You offered everybody like a big lump sum of money if they were to like do something for you. Sometimes that's how things get done.
That's the problem. Right there. That's the whole entire problem. I you know, look, if I was a billionaire, I would be paying people to implement these, and we wouldn't be talking about this. You know, it'd be done, because I'd already showed the world this is how it's done. But, you know, they'll send $50 billion or $50 million, whatever the price was, $50 million. Let's just go with the lowered one, $50 million. They sent $50 million to the United Nations Climate Change Fund. All right, what did we get for our money? Nothing. I'm hearing crickets. We didn't get nothing.
That's right.
What do you think, Ted? What did we get?
I mean, I talked to that guy, Brian O'Leary, down in Ecuador. He was like a astronaut.
Yeah.
You ever met him or heard of him?
Uh-oh.
He's pretty wild.
Well.
Man, he like lived there in Ecuador because, free energy basically. He knew all about it because he was an astronaut and he didn't like what was going on. I think they made some attempts on his life, so he kind of lived out his life down there in a little villa in Ecuador He told me there was a billionaire that got a whole group of scientists together from across the world and flew them somewhere around that area, somewhere in North or South America, and had some kind of convention, and he like flew them all out and gave them all like a check for some or another, and then they all set up the plan, or like chose like four different techniques for making electricity that all would be very difficult to weaponize. And they were planning to work on it, and like the billionaire just disappeared. Like after that initial meeting and they set up everything, it was like 60 scientists or something he had handpicked from across the earth. And then he just disappeared. Nobody ever talked to him again.
Wow.
I never did much research into it, but that dude wrote books and stuff. I assume he wasn't lying to me. He was like an author. You know what
I
mean?
Well, I believe it because everybody who comes in front with a way to fix things, they end up, meeting their demise. You know, it may be someday they'll come and get me, but I don't think they're going to get me because one thing. Number one is I don't have the resources to make anything happen, so I'm just talking out the side of my neck. And as far as, if I ever did get out there on the mainstream and was able to put my word out, they'd turn it around to say it's not plausible. I mean, groups like the Mythbusters would try, I used to respect the Mythbusters, but now I just despise them because they basically sold their soul to the devil, so to speak, because they were poo-pooing hydrogen technology, and talking about how dangerous it was. Well, it's not dangerous if you understand the physics of what's going on and you're not being ridiculous like they were. But nonetheless, that would have been technology that would have got people off of the so-called fossil fuel. Ted, there ain't no such thing as fossil fuel. There never has been anything such as fossil fuel.
The Mythbusters couldn't even build the Bedini simple schoolgirl themselves, so they brought in somebody from MIT to build the simple schoolgirl model, and they couldn't even build it correctly.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's guys like...
You're telling me that me, like some, like whatever, I got an associate's degree, I can make a simple schoolgirl model of the Bedini that will charge things, but they can't, and they're MIT professors? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
Like, my friend does air conditioner repair. He can, like, run the majority of his house off a Bedini machine, and it doesn't work. Like, and the MIT professor and Mythbusters can't figure it out. Like, I don't really get it.
That's the whole thing. It's all, it's like they deliberately don't want to make it work.
Well, you wonder, either that or they just tried it once and were like, well, that doesn't work. And it's like, well, you're not a really good scientist because, yeah, it didn't really work at first. I had to do it a couple different ways and mess around a little bit, and then it started working.
Well, I have deliberately tried to stay within the fence line of the laws of physics so that when I show people things that there is no way that it can be refuted for that purpose. So I know we can go outside the laws of physics as well, but that's down the road. First, you got to get something on the table that people will recognize before you can even get anywhere in this world. To stay within the laws of physics and basic science and mechanics, if the people really seriously paid attention to what I've been trying to say all along, is that we have every single thing we need to generate clean, renewable, sustainable, all those fancy words that the environmentalists, the hypocrites of the world that they always complain about it, but they don't ever get anything resolved because they're going about their business the wrong way and protesting and wasting time and resources. When if they were to back somebody like yourself or me or anybody else who's in alternative research, they'd get results. I don't get it. I don't get it. Why are we still talking about saving the planet?
Wouldn't that really be like applicable to like every facet of life, whether it's like your roads and your nearest town, the way your cars work, the way the health system works, the way anything works? Like, isn't that how it is? Like, people really just complain about all these things all the time and then nothing really gets done?
Yeah, they just want the government to come in here and solve it.
Why would really electricity be any different? Nothing else is really that different. Granted, there's a lot of hardworking people that work real hard and do what they need to survive, but
there's
a lot of people that really do complain, and I think it's built up with no action behind the complaint. I think that's like based on like like kind of like media, like entertainment. It's like, well, it's just part of your life. You're raised to like just complain about a few things every day and then not really do anything and be like, well, I gotta work. I gotta pay my bills and do my job.
Yeah.
It's like, it's really wrong there. I mean, yeah, you make some complaints and you work and you do your job and you might chip in a couple bucks to an agency you think is doing good for the world or whatnot.
If you hired a doggone construction crew to do some work for you and they didn't want to do it right or they just didn't do it at all, you'd fire them. But we got people out there in government that essentially we hired by electing them into office and they're not doing their job.
Here's the thing about construction. It's a good metaphor because, like, truthfully, I mean, you should know how to do construction. I mean, I'm hanging out with women that are helping me learn how to build walls and put up drywall and things like that because, like, you know, everybody needs to know that. That's why there's this huge push in, like, STEM and, like, all science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and it's aimed towards women because everybody needs to know how to do construction, and now, like, it's the truth. Everybody needs to know how to work on their car. Everybody needs to know how to grow a garden. Everybody needs to know how to fix a few things in their house. You don't need to hire a construction crew. This is the problem with the government, maybe, is that we're hiring it all out instead of doing it ourselves. Like,
well, and that's what I was trying to get at, was the fact that, you know, you see the track record, but for some reason, we're under the mindset that maybe one of these days they'll turn over a new leaf and they'll start doing their job, you know. Maybe if we keep hollering long enough, they'll finally get up and get work. That's like, you know, if I ask some lazy person to go out and do a chore or something like that, you know, because, you know, like, anybody, if I say, you know, I need you to go out and mow that grass, right? Well, if I don't have money to compensate them, they're obviously not going to do it. But even if I do have money, and I'm begging them to go out there and do it, you know, how many times I got to do that, you know, before it gets done? It'd be better if I just knew how to run that mower and get up and do it myself. What do you think?
I can use my hands and clear square yards of grass with my hands in minutes.
Well, there you go. Where there's a will, there's a way.
I call it weeding, and you don't have to pull the entire root out. You can just grab the top at whatever height you want. Grab it with your fist, pull your hand back at a certain angle, just rip right out. Just move on. You can clear feet of grass in minutes with your hands, if you want. It's like the floor. We didn't have a mop over here for a while. I was mopping the floor on my hands and knees, and I was like, man, the mop is a really good invention because it really is efficient, and it really does help you to get a lot cleaned up quickly compared to doing it on your hands and knees. But doing it on your hands and knees works, and it doesn't take that long to do the room on your hands and knees. Like, you didn't need anything more than a rag. You know what I'm saying? It's tough. It's harder on the body, but then you look at your grandparents that lived to be old. Like, most of the redneck people where I live, or country folk, or whatever you want to call these folks that work real hard and, like, have simple lives, usually live a decent age. And they always have. They've lived in their 80s around here, 90s. And it's like, they can't work. They get crippled from working so hard.
I get that. Look, it's understandable that we can get a lot of exercise and we can do a lot of stuff. But the thing about it is, we're wasting a time when we could take this technology and we could make it easier and healthier on everybody. Why, you know, there's a saying, work smarter, not harder. And so if you're working smarter, you're number one, you're not in all these toxic chemicals or breathing terrible dust or whatever. We've got tools and technology to resolve every single problem that you could possibly think of. But
the reason I was thinking of the little things is because it can bring back the self-esteem and the understanding that you can, and that you are self-reliant, and that you can do these things on your own. And I think that that's the basis of kind of why people are apathetic to a lot of things, because deep inside they don't believe they can do anything about it.
Yeah, I get that.
That's faint, because in their potential level is so huge, just like every spark. It's like everything that clicks and makes a spark, its potential level is huge. Just like every human that has a heartbeat's potential level is huge. It's just, what will they do with it? And when people start to feel like a self-esteem and develop like a guilt for, you know, being apathetic, like it can drive them even farther back away and like build more barriers whenever like they just need a helping hand to be like, hey, look, like we're going to do this together. We're a community. Like we are going to help each other. And if things get weird, like we're still going to help each other. There's always going to be a strong group of people. And then it becomes easier for the people that want to take to become givers when everybody else is giving around them. And like if the community is real strong, the people that take won't need to take because there'll be so much giving going on, it's not necessary. And that's my hope, is that if we can't land this whole free energy thing to like really get where we need to be sustainable, to be all self-reliant and to be safe and to have that little bit of electricity that keeps you warm or keeps you fed or gives you water, like if we're not going to have that, then we just got to start working together really good. We just got to have a community where we're going to help each other and live like, and know that like, well, if the grocery store closes, we're just going to all Brendan Barrett and share. Or if the water goes bad, you know, we're all going to share the water and what is good, and somebody has some good water somewhere always, and we're going to share it. Otherwise, like we have, like you say, all the technology to make everybody self-sufficient and everybody have like the oasis that they want, where they can be warm, fed, and have hydration. And it's like, but if it doesn't happen and it's not going to happen, like, we have to be prepared to work together then. It's, you don't get, you know, there's no choice about working together, because it doesn't seem like everybody is going to have a free energy device in the next year, because nobody's really pushing that in the mainstream media. And that's the only thing really holding anything back, I think, is that aspect of what is trending or popular.
Well, if it, that's the problem, right there.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, you know, I'm not trending and I'm not popular, so I can't get my message out there to people that says this, pretty much what you just said. But, you know, I would love to take it and do a social experiment and, you know, get a group of people that really do care all gathered into one place and be funded so that we can sit there and literally show these technologies real time. I mean, from start to finish, take garbage and build, you know, recycling plants that turn that into materials that can turn that into building, you know, actual buildings and even tools for that matter. And to show people that in this particular community, there is zero waste. Nothing, absolutely nothing gets wasted. It blows my doors off how a group like NASA will take something like the space station, and you know they recycle everything on the space station, with the exception of whatever they throw out the window. They throw out into space and it gets burned up as it comes back into the atmosphere, said that, how they said to get rid of their trash. But if you took those resources, those same doggone resources, then absolutely nothing would get wasted. There wouldn't be no reason for landfills anymore, because everything is a valuable resource. It don't matter what it is. You know, even food waste, it's a valuable resource. You could turn it into fuel. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think that the most advanced civilizations right now are like the most recycling civilizations. Like, they utilize more of their stuff. I mean, there's some Scandinavian countries doing it, and there's some Asian countries that recycle a lot of their stuff to rebuild their technology. It's crazy to think about where technology really is on application on an international level, whenever like language barriers stop us from really seeing what like other corporations and other countries and other patents are doing.
Yeah.
But like going on in other countries with advanced technology in like public sector and commercial sector rivals like our military industrial sector. It's just, we don't really have a lot of access to it. And it's kind of of even the news of it. And it's like kind of a shame, because like really, like a lot of these inventions could be saving the world. Like, they're, all the inventions to save the world, if you will, are already invented. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We can keep inventing more ones, but like, there's plenty of technology to go off of if it was just shared. But like, there's just a difference between technology and then like, what people are using technology. Like, theoretical technology, I guess, if you will, even though there are prototypes and it's been proven, but it's still like theoretical in the way that like it's not applied across the board. Like everybody in every country knows about the gasoline engine. Now granted, that's been around for a while, but also everybody in every country pretty much knows about the cell phone now. And that hasn't been around that long. So it shows you that the cell phone, like, the technology could be given to all the countries at any time if we were ready to, because you can see it with the cell phone. Now, will it ever be like that? It's like, I don't know. I mean, I remember doing a little side report in school on, you know, technology for food service industry. And one of the magazines the lady gave us to do the reports out of, it had a device in it that you plugged into the wall, and you plug into a water source, and it made two different types of water. It made one that was like an alkali and ionized, and one that was like a basic ionized. And the one was for disinfecting, like it would kill 99% of bacteria after it sat there for an X amount of seconds. And then the other one was for degreasing. It would like break up grease. And all it was water and electricity. And it was NSF certified, like good enough to be in a kitchen, commercial grade, like that could be your sanitizer. It's like with just the level of what restaurants today and your home people are putting down the drains just to wash and clean dishes and wash and clean things. Like there's technology that's been around since, I guess, at least the late 90s of how to, use that regular water. To do all that same stuff, just yeah. Regular water for charge. And you can even, it even said, like, you could drink it, it was non-toxic, it's just, like, not recommended. Like, if you drink a lot of, like, alkalized or ionized water, it could mess you up. But in theory, like, this was back whenever the spinach E. coli outbreaks were going on, and this is like, well, you could dip your spinach in this, you know, acid water that kills 99% of, like, all this stuff, and in theory, like, potentially, you know, save yourself from contamination of different foodborne illnesses.
Well, we've got cold plasma technology that will kill all those bacteria like that. So, you know, it's like if I got a toolbox and I got a lot of tools in there and I don't pick them up, those tools ain't going to work themselves. And all this technology that we're talking about, it's been around for the longest time. Even back in the late 1800s, they had technology that would blow your doors off if you understood what the heck it was. But
well, see that if that machine that makes all of your soapy and degreaser and whatever water out of no chemicals. Now, if somebody really cared about water and about the, you know, how much we spend on water purification and how, what actually goes into it and, you know, how we got to, how having access to fresh, clean water is such a beautiful thing. Why do we use all the soaps and chemicals when we know that water could be the wash water and the rinse water for all this and still have all the same effects that meet all the standards of the health department?
Yeah.
You have to ask yourself, like, well, where is regulation when you need it? Like, why wouldn't we regulate out and maybe not say it's illegal to use regular soaps, but incentivize? Say, like, well, we're going to give you a little off on your taxes or something if you use just water to wash all your stuff. Because it's going to be easier on all of our systems.
Well, not to mention that if you took and understood the physics of water, you wouldn't even have to use soap, and you could still purify your dishes without, you know, any antibacterials or anything like that. Because, you know, when you boil water, there's viruses and stuff can't live in certain temperatures, and obviously you're not going to want to have your hands in there, but They had this back in the 80s, they probably got updated versions, but they had this doggone dishwashing machine that they called the Dragon, and you put your dishes in one side and they could be dirty as all get out. When they come out the other side, they were steam cleaned and dry and they were ready to use again. And they didn't use harsh chemicals back then in order to clean things, you know, but, you know, nonetheless, that technology has been around forever and a day. You know, you can use, you know, energy, electricity to basically separate those water molecules and leave all the heavies behind. And then you could recycle those, whatever waste products were left over, and then recycle that hydrogen and oxygen back into fresh water. So you got clean water always being regenerated back into the water side of the cycle. You see what I mean?
Well, definitely.
It's just, doggone it, it's frustrating because when you spend a lifetime of researching everything under the sun, and then somebody says that they got a problem, and you step forward with the solution, unless you've got a white coat or a big fancy piece of paper on a wall that says that you're a professor or, you know, you got a degree in this, they don't want to hear what you got to say. And as I'm talking to the average Joes and Janes of different, financial backgrounds, I've talked to some pretty wealthy people. You know, they're pretty satisfied with just being able to go about their life and do what they do. I mean, I guess their little circle's complete. They got a good job. They got a really nice house. They have a recycling bin. But one of the things that I was mentioning earlier about, I asked this lady about Olathe, Kansas. I said, I asked her husband. I said, let me ask you a stupid question. And he said, what's that? And I said, does Olathe recycle? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, do they tell you to take the bottle caps off of the bottles before you recycle it? And he said, yeah. So I said, well, where does those bottle caps go? And he said, in the trash, which then basically ends up going to landfill. And of course, you know, I've been doing that bottle caps for Mad Science campaign, right? Yeah. Well, it's only going to be as successful as the people are willing to participate. If people aren't willing to participate and take the time to throw a bottle cap into that bucket to allow me to show them what you can do with this that otherwise would have been trash that is now a valuable resource that can be turned into something worthy, you know, and solve a problem. Otherwise, you figure 1,000 households, and if they only drink one bottled water or soda per doggone month, so that's 1,000 bottle caps per month going in the trash that if used properly would be a premium recyclable that is a valuable resource, is actually financial value to that plastic, and it can be reused. But because of the size of it and people don't want to take the time to engineer a machine that will basically grind this plastic down or whatever, and be able to use it, they're talking about how these machines is they're dangerous because even drinking straws, they get jammed up in the machine. Well, engineer machines specifically for drinking straws, then, right? So that's the whole deal right there. But nonetheless, Olathe, Kansas is just one of the hypocrites out there in all the recycling cities or states or whatever out there, because they say they want you to recycle, but they're first telling you to throw a valuable resource in the trash that then becomes a problem for, you know, the environment. So that to me makes them a hypocrite. You know, if you're going to tell 1,000 households to throw 1,000 bottle caps in the trash every month, but you want them to recycle, does that make any sense to you?
Bubby, I looked into some of this back from I was having some dinner down south with some family, and it's like, they were like, this guy worked for a municipality down there, and, he's like, all of that, recycling, he's like, they throw that all in the trash. And I was like, what? And he's like, it's cheaper to just throw it in the trash, and it's like, it makes everybody happy that we collect it all and everything, and there's programs for it, but, you know, it goes to the trash.
But the problem is, even when it makes it to the trash...
You gotta understand something, she says. People believe in their heart and soul that they're recycling.
Yeah.
They put it in the green container, and they push it out to the curb. And they know they throw stuff sometimes in it that shouldn't be there, some of them. And then some people know that they, like, clean every bottle the way they should. And then, at the end of the day, I don't know if this is true or not, but I've been hearing more and more rumors that, like, most of that stuff is going right to the trash. It's being picked up by the same people
yep.
that do the trash, like the same waste management companies. They come around in different trucks, but it's going to the trash.
Yeah.
And prove it, but it's just what I've been hearing, that the whole recycling system across America is somewhat of a scam.
No, you're right. You're right. And it's not just America. It's Britain. You know, it's Australia. The system's broken. You know, and we're wasting...
I don't know if it's true, but I've only heard it from one dude in one small town in West Virginia, but I looked it up, and it seems like there is some evidence out there that a lot of the recycling from certain waste management companies is, like, you know, going to the trash.
Well, Anon5859 in the chat room over there, the Shaziz chat room, said soap is made of fats, solid fats, N-A-O-H, I don't remember what that is. soap makers have been around for since 2800 BC or whatever. But look, I get it. There are natural soaps out there, lye soaps. Huh?
You gotta look detergent. What's detergent made out of? Well, detergent isn't soap. Soap and detergent are two different things. And when you go to the store and you look up what you're buying laundry detergent. You're buying dish detergent. What do you need soap?
Also,
you want soap, you gotta go get it. You gotta find soap. Real soap is soap. I agree. Yeah. I love soap. That's what I use.
The antibacterial soap, though, is a different deal, you know, because antibacterial soap is not discriminating against what types of bacteria, you know. If you have a septic system and you're using antibacterial soap, you might end up with a super bacteria eventually because, you know, nature makes things immune when it needs those things to break down stuff, if you understand what I'm saying. So,
near the room you have, you'll get your raccoon and drop it in there.
Throw a raccoon in there?
Yeah, whatever you got ground. Something that's been eating your garden or bothering you or whatever, and there's something you find on the side of the road, some roadkill, and you go open up your septic tank, drop it in there, or restart it all.
Dang. So, like, throw your roadkill down there. Well, you know, like I said, there's still solutions. There's solutions available, but I don't know. Maybe, I just don't know how to do this. I don't know how to get the people to the table with the average Joe to actually want. You gotta want to do this. You know, who cares? It's not my problem, right? I think it's everybody's problem. If you care about your future generations, what kind of world they're going to live in, there are communities out there who make a living, entire communities who make a living off of trash. All right? And so, you know, that's cool. But wouldn't it be better that if these communities were able to be uplifted and they didn't have the health concerns of digging around in trash that might have things in there that shouldn't be in there? You know, when you see kids climbing through garbage to try to pick out certain types of plastics so that they can recycle them and make some money, there's money to be made off of plastics. All right, and I know I'm on plastics, but plastic seems to be the biggest problem that we've got right now as far as environmental waste, and it's so easily resolved. But you know, if you're talking to somebody who lives in a very nice community who already does their part and recycles, they don't care. You could sit around and you could tell them about the technology that is available. They might be interested for a minute, but, you know, once I get to talking about mad science to some people out there, there's a point when their eyes just roll back in their head. I'm just so far past what they've learned in school that they don't, I lose them quick.
Well, I like the, I think it's a real good idea that device they come out with that takes all them plastic and gumbles it up and you can make it into the, you can extrude it into that 3D printer fiber stuff.
Yeah.
And then people, like, most every municipality somewhere, like, they got a university or college, they got a 3D printer somewhere. And if you told them you were making your own local recycled 3D printer stuff, they'd spend some of that government money on your stuff to have that and say, like, look, we made this with some guy up the street, collects bottles or whatever, makes that printer fiber. You know what I mean? Like, cause that printer fiber stuff, it's kind of expensive. I mean, it ain't real expensive, don't get me wrong, but if you could sit around and make it yourself and sell reels of it. I mean, that could be your job.
But see, here's one of the problems. Here's one of the problems of that is that whenever, like, okay, like I got bottle caps, right? And they come in all different colors. Well, people think, well, I got to pay somebody to sit around and sort these colors out. Well, you don't, because we actually have the technology. You know, we got spectral analysis, which will take different light spectrums and it'll tell the computer to do whatever you want. And so you could actually build a system to where, you know, you got these bottle caps coming down this rail, and as the light is shined on them, the computer will recognize what color that is and kick the color into its perspective bucket. You see what I'm saying? You don't even have to have a hand sorting them. You could have the computer recognizing this is a red cap, goes that way, this is a blue cap, goes the other way, and on down the line. We have that technology. And so it's a matter of putting this stuff into actual work. You know, you could bring me a dump truck load of bottle caps, and I can make boards out of it. I can make tubing and all kinds of stuff out of it. And if you want a specific color, and I got the doggone color analyzer, you know, set up on my system, I can give you whatever color you want. Look, the red, that's a premium right there, a premium color, premium recyclable, and all those bottle caps that would have otherwise ended up in the trash out in the landfill now get turned into something that's useful. That's the thing.
You know, well, around here they stopped collecting glass.
Yeah, glass is another one.
I mean, glass, I've seen these people on the internet take them wood chippers, and then they do a little conversion on them, throw the glass down in the wood chipper, and it comes out this sand, and they're like rubbing their hands in it, and don't even charge you.
See?
Turn the glass sand.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
Well, I like that.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome.
I don't know what I'm going to do with all that glass sand, but might start learning how to blow glass and melting it.
Well, it becomes a premium recyclable. And even the color of glass, you could still do the same exact thing. You know, you could have doggone machines that would detect the color of the glass and separate it for you. You wouldn't even have to do it. You know, and even if you just ground it all up in the same exact color, there's so many different things that you could make out of glass that it wouldn't matter what color it was. You know, imagine multicolored bricks. You could build fancy looking decorative walls out of. They've got things like that out there, man. But most people are going to come back to the same old thing. Oh, it's too expensive. It's cheaper just to make fresh ones. What? Is it cheaper to trash the planet?
I mean, different ways of looking at it. I mean, it really might be compared to, like, moving stuff around, collecting. If you really put the dollars and cents into everything, it's pretty amazing how anything gets done around here on Earth.
Yeah, I know. But the thing about it is, if you are going to complain about it, such as trash being out there and killing birds, I was going to play a podcast before you came on, but I'll just tell people what it... Basically, this doggone... like the Galapagos Islands getting trash on it and different places out there in the ocean. Birds are picking up these little scraps of plastic and feeding it to their young. And these birds are dying because they're swallowing a bunch of plastic. And so it becomes an environmental hazard for, you know, the wildlife out there. And even to the extent when the sun breaks it down and it becomes microplastic and fish are eating that, you know, we're part of a food chain, so you're actually eating plastic too, to some extent, you know. It just blows my doors off. People will complain about the environment, but when it comes down to actually listening to a solution, they don't want to hear it. It's not their problem. Who cares? So how we get past that barrier, Ted? That is the biggest barrier that we've got: communication. We got the solutions.
Well, it revolves back to like a higher level, in my opinion, where you got to understand, like, at least from my understanding, this is just my opinion now. That is everything that I say. It's just my opinion, but it's like it seems to me that there's a little bit more to reality than we want to understand, and we can look at the Michelson-Morley experiment and the proof that the ether doesn't exist or does it does exist or whatever people want to believe. But at the end of the day, there's like gurus, there's religious folks, there's many different people. There's people that have gone into comas, there's people that have done too many drugs. There's all different kinds of people that have experienced something deeper. And the change is internal and has nothing to do with people around you. We can't rely on what others are doing to give credence to our own spiritual growth and what's happening. And so, like, while being real close to understanding that the technology needed to propel humanity correctly is, like, it's within our grasp, and it is kind of being held back a little bit, it's more of the spiritual aspect of it all that I think is what we're missing, and that is that this change comes within, and that we truly need to become internally the person that we want everybody else to be. And we can't really wait any longer on our own growth because of others not quite being ready, because it was never really about waiting for the other people to be ready.
Well, I get all that, but I'm trying to figure out, I'm trying to find out where my place is in this solution-based network that we put together. I'm trying to figure out where my place is, because I don't have the patience or the time to wait around for everyone else to become enlightened, you know. I want to get results done, and if I'm going to sit here week after week and waste my time trying to tell people about solutions that are available. Somebody asked me one time, well, if you got the answer to free energy, why don't you just put it down there on the table and let everybody run off with it? Well, okay, I've been putting the information down after information after information. So if I drop all my knowledge on the table and then it just goes right down the toilet, so to speak, and nobody else takes it and runs with it, I just wasted all that information. I wasted time. I wasted my time even trying to, you know, give people what it is that they said they wanted. You know, as far as building actual prototypes, it is a slow, tedious process, because the craftsmanship necessary to do the technical portions of what it is that I'm trying to show people, I don't have all those skill sets. And so I reached out to the community and tried to find the dream team, people who were craftsmen that were, you know, able to make things really nice to make it work. So I'm having to slowly put this one particular device together so that I can put it out there. And as I'm doing this, I'm trying to do little updates of what's going on with this thing so that people, if they're watching it and they understand how I'm explaining it to them, they could start replicating it themselves, and they would already have it by the time mine's done. They'd have one in their hand as well. But for me to just come out here and throw all my knowledge down on the table, say, here it is, take it or leave it, and then walk away, and then watch as all that research just kind of gets swept downstream and under the rug, so to speak. And I've seen it so many times. And YouTube has become completely and utterly worthless as far as trying to share information to people, because, like I said, it says I got 8,700 and some odd subscribers, but the views don't even resemble anything. For the most part, it's either I got a few people that support me and I got a lot of people that criticize, and very few people that actually take that information and run with it. It's the ones that actually take the information and run with it that I need the most, because those are what I would call the dream team. Those are people that want to test and make things happen, you know? And it's hard to get those folks together because of multiple reasons, most of which all falls down to finance. If I could afford to have people fly, you know, here all the time and work on projects together, that would be awesome. If we had a centralized place, even if I had to travel 100 miles, you know, a day just to be with the other like-minded creative people that want to try to build things, that would be worth my time, because all this information actually makes it out there to the people. You know, I am not a photographer. You know, I can take some pretty good pictures, but I'm not a video maker either. You know, I can make a video, but if you see what I'm trying to say here,
I feel you 100%.
I got mechanical abilities in my mind.
Myself.
Huh?
I feel. I've had to work through the same feelings myself. And what I've found is that if we rely on the actions of other people to determine our joy and happiness levels, we very well may be disappointed on this trip through Earth.
I don't allow that to do that to me. I'm not allowing that to determine whether I can be happy or not. My deal is, if I step up to the table here, right, because somebody said that they needed something, if I step up to the table, and I'm sitting here trying to speak to everybody and give them this information that I got my little piece of the puzzle, and it's just not going anywhere, why should I keep stepping up to the table? Is what I'm trying to say. And it's frustrating because I want to fix things. I want to be a part of helping fix things, but I can't do it myself. But I'm not going to allow that to destroy my spirit. I get frustrated. That's why I call it mad science, because I know we got the answers, but we're just not using them. That's what the problem is.
I understand. I mean, the only way I deal with stuff like that, with that whole thing, because it's a pretty big conundrum, the farther you get involved with understanding the potential, the farther you get away from, or the farther you can become frustrated with the fact that it's not in use and that nobody seems to care too much. But at the end of the day, like, there is a lot of people that care about it. At the end of the day, like, the internet still always will, like, draw in more of the people that are looking to get a little, like, whether we like to admit it or not, like, we're probably better off, like, just, like, going to the nearest pub and, like, finding people that are, like, electricians or something that are, like, older and don't, you know, just open-minded and, like, just want to talk about stuff like this to grow our ideas than to, like, get on the internet where it seems like, yeah, people really do, like, travel around to, like, figure out, like, I don't know. It just seems that, yes, the internet does attract negativity. It's like, but it also attracts positivity. And, like, a lot of what I've learned in life has been because of the internet. And, like, I think we can all agree that the internet has, like, propelled intellect in a way, or at least knowledge sharing in a huge way. All different kinds of things.
Yeah.
And so, I think that what we're seeing is that it's just, it's hard being patient. It's hard when people don't jump on things that need to be jumped on. And we have a lot of, you know, expectations. We have high expectations because we know the potential of people, and it sucks when you don't get to see that.
I had a shirt made. I'm gonna go ahead and find it again on the podcast pages where I think I put it, but I'm gonna go ahead and post a picture of this shirt. I actually had this shirt made. It cost me about $30 or more. It's around about $30. And on this shirt, it said, "Mad science is the key to truth about free energy. Ask me why." And so far to date, I've had 2 people read that shirt and ask me why. Alright? And so I'm out there, I'm constantly talking to people about ideas and solutions. And, you know, that's basically all I got. Until resources is in my hand, that's all I got. You know, my words, my knowledge.
I'm thankful for Isha's is. And I gotta admit, like, the only reason I know about all this potential people is because I'm trying to work on it in myself, I'm trying to meet my own potential. I know that we all have great abilities on Earth, and, like, sooner we really admit that and work towards it and try to keep, you know, the channel clean and keep the temple clean and you know, follow the teachings of a lot of the prophets and the great elders, we'd be a lot better off. And then it's difficult because it involves, like, personal practice and stuff, and I know that that's the basis behind opening up the minds of people to accept this kind of technology and stuff. A lot of people are, and even myself at times, like, if we're not hydrated, if we're eating crazy foods and sugars and fake colors and stuff, our brains are, like, firing, like, incorrectly. And whether people want to admit it or not, they're, like, walking around, like, fired up on all the different things that we're fired up on. It's called neurotoxicity. And it's a real thing. It's from whatever you want to call it, diet, you want to call it aspartame, MSG, all these things affect the nervous system.
Yeah, but there's also a solution for
it. It's hard for our young people to even focus on stuff in school, and they want to give them even more drugs to help them focus.
But there are solutions. Like,
and where we're at right now is a real point where we have to come together, get each other healthy, get each other happy, and then we can start opening our brains and our minds and everything up to love and energy and everything. The future.
Okay.
And it sucks because we've got a lot of the keys to how humans are going to technologically live together congruently with Mother Nature, with each other, in peace. And nobody's jumping on it. And I feel your pain, man. I do. I understand your frustration. I love you.
Yeah. Love you too, man. Anon 5859 in the Shaziz Mad Science chat said, can't, never could, just do it, less talk, more work. Oh, man, if you... Brother,
that's true. He's right, Doug. You know he's right.
Yeah, I mean, but if I... I got over 200 and some odd videos. I got an astronomical amount of podcasts. I got tons of working prototypes. I've got... you know, my own mad science lab, and I take Saturdays to do the mad science show and Sundays to do the Knights of the Round Table. I got a bottle cap for mad science bucket campaign going on. And basically, Anon said, if you have an idea, put it on a GoFundMe or a Kickstarter. And once again, my talent isn't into trying to lobby people to do things, because I'm obviously not a very good motivator if I can't get people to the table to at least talk about the solutions. And so, you know, as far as me going putting a GoFundMe page up and stuff like that, I'm just not a salesman. You figure out a way to take the best of what I've said off of these podcasts and put it down into text form and explain to people what it is that I've been trying to do for people. You know, what I'm trying to say, what I'm trying to, you know, help out or whatever. You know, that's what I need. I need a cameraman, all right? I need a crew. I need people to come together. And we show all these things working, you know? I'm trying to pile it all into one little... I got it shoved in one little tiny lab down here, and I got a network. You know, I'm sitting here shouting out the four points of the compass to every nation out there, and, you know, I'm trying to get people to pass the links on. I can't even get past the doggone security certificate because my site and other good sites like People for People Radio, because of Google shenanigans, has not secure on there. So if they come onto our site, they'll see the web browser says it's not secure and they'll go somewhere else. So we're under the gun because I don't have the resources to take care of, you know, this secured certificate thing that they want to force me into. And then I don't have any control over how Google's algorithms either set me and my videos and podcasts down at the bottom of the search deal. And I don't have the words to get out there to the doggone senators and the congressmen and anybody who has access to funding and a power structure or even a large base of people that are, you know, able to listen about a particular concern. So I'm doing the best I can with what I got. That's why I always keep on saying it's duct tape and bailing wire here at Shaziz Radio. Alright? We duct tape and bail and wire everything and holding everything together with a wing and a prayer. And this is the best I got. That's what I've been trying to say to people. I get it. If I could figure out the whole GoFundMe thing and had a game plan in action, that'd probably be a good deal. I got a donate link pretty much stashed in the background on the chat room, but I don't promote it because I'm not out here trying to scam people. I'm just trying to put ideas on the table. If they believe in research that I'm doing and they want to help out and they want to find it bad enough, they'll find it. But that's the thing. Look, folks, this isn't about money for me. It never has been about money. It's about the system said we had problems, and we needed to become energy independent. We needed clean, renewable, sustainable energy sources, energy storage. And I'm sitting here pointing out, here's the doggone technology right there. There it is. Right? And if you can't get, that message across to people who can actually make it so, then it's a slow, meticulous deal that I have to go through to try to put a prototype together to show, because seeing is believing these days. You have to see it. And they want to be able to hold it in their hand. They want to be able to measure it. I'm trying to put that in front of them.
Can I'd like to interject the theory of, like the hundred monkey theory, that like once a certain amount of animals on Earth start practicing a certain technique, all the other ones on Earth start knowing how to do it. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
I actually believe that technology that you're speaking on, it works kind of like that as well. So that inventions per se kind of start working for more people as more people do them. Hence why some people can put a circuit together and for some reason it doesn't seem to work for them. Maybe, like, I don't know if that's too far into, like, whatever, quantum land or whatever. You know, but I think that there's a little shred of truth in that. And I think that the more people create prototypes and build little things, the stronger, like, other people across the earth are able to do it simultaneously, whether we know it or not. And I think the evidence is there through the 100th monkey experiments.
Well, I'm going to continue to make what I can. That's it. I'm just saying, maybe my biggest issue is that I'm just impatient because, when somebody says that they got an issue and you step up there with a solution and they're not even willing to accept it, or they want to argue with you over whether it is or isn't possible. You know, guys like Henry Ford said, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right.
Well, I'm not going to agree on everything. It's fine. I mean, you have to let that go and understand that. I mean, people don't agree on things on this earth. That's a fact. Like, your version of technology and somebody else's version of technology are... it's all subjective.
Yeah.
And people want to think things are really objective, but I tell you, I mean, the way I view the 100th monkey thing is that it goes even further than just the monkey's ability to be able to do something, but it actually may even, like, start to enact, like, the awareness of laws of physics or something that humans weren't really aware of before. And that's what I think that could be going on with technology. And why things, are the way they are. Not enough people really know or believe to accept it, to allow it to be in the public sector in a way.
Well,
and I think they're doing the right thing. I really believe in my heart that the thing that needs to go on for me is to create devices right now that are very simple, like the simple Schoolgirl SSG Bedini style systems that charge batteries. Because when I search online, it's like, oh, Bedini system kills batteries. Bedini just does weird things. It does all that. It can kill batteries. It can desulfate them. It can do really weird things to batteries. It can make them charge cold.
Yeah, but see, here's the problem, though. The batteries are the weak part in that system.
I agree 100%, Jesus, but I personally, like you just mentioned a second ago, like if you don't have the skills to build what you're saying, like it's a long, hard road. I don't personally have the skills to build a lot of the concepts that you shared with me. Not to say I couldn't develop the skills, but I just don't have them. Like, my skill level is very simple.
You don't have to build them. You can go out, and capacitor technology is amazing. Capacitors outdo batteries. Batteries have their place in the system. All right, but capacitors is where the real storage is at. So, if you combine a battery and capacitor technology, you'll find that you won't destroy with that Bedini circuit those batteries. Like, they actually sell
I think Bedini calls that the comparator circuit.
Yeah, they
The Bedini machine spins, and then it goes and takes that energy that's really strange and puts it into capacitors. And the comparator circuit, once the capacitors reach a certain thing, whether it's timing or voltage, it dumps it into a battery, and that charges a battery quite quickly.
Yeah, that's the thing. Batteries aren't made to charge and discharge as rapid as we're demanding on them. So capacitors are. So right. those combined technologies, they make hybrid battery capacitors. They use them in diesel engines for diesel trucks and stuff for like really super cold weather starts, you know, because a capacitor is capable of producing a really strong, powerful boost to that system. And they'll charge right back up really fast. So where the battery isn't able to charge and discharge as rapidly as the capacitors, the battery still can compensate by keeping that capacitor full at all times. So you just basically took the demand off of the battery and put it on the capacitor, and the capacitor is designed to be able to handle that. You see what I mean? So
we have the
solution even in that problem of desulfating the doggone batteries. So essentially, you're dehydrating the battery because when you pull a load on there, it's actually doing the electrolysis process, separating the hydrogen and oxygen in that electrolyte that's in the battery acid, right? There's water in there. And so it will actually do an electrolysis process, and in the process of that, it basically builds up crud in that battery that then in turn shorts across those plates. Well, if you're not pulling that demand off of those batteries direct, and you're just allowing the batteries to push their energy, you know, naturally to where they want to go into the capacitor, and you're using the capacitor as a buffer between that battery and whatever you're trying to use, those batteries won't get destroyed. So,
right.
There's
well,
the answer.
That's where I think a lot of people are, because I see a lot of people have built Bedini's machines, and a lot of people haven't seen the results they want to see. And it's like, well, here's where I stop. I've got about four nice lead-acid deep-cycle batteries. I bought them to ship them down to Puerto Rico, but then I couldn't ship them because it's way too expensive, take too long.
Yeah.
Foolish idea. So I got these batteries, and they're pretty nice. And, you know, I don't want to just go damaging them. So it's like, I think a lot of other people are in the same spot. Well, okay, I got a little solar setup. Last thing I want to do is go connecting capacitors and stuff up to my nice batteries and possibly damage them.
No.
So like, how do we help somebody become safe with that? How do you tell somebody, okay, well, use these certain microfarad capacitors and put a few of them in parallel and in series, and your voltage levels aren't going to damage your batteries. Don't worry about that.
No.
And it's like, well, that takes a lot of trust. At least for somebody like me, because I'm sitting here with some capacitors that fill up real quick, and I'm sitting here with some really nice batteries, and I don't really want to hook them together because I'm not rich.
Huh. Yeah, well, that's the thing. You got to understand what happens with capacitors. All right, now you can make switches to where you can already connect the battery to the circuit without that switch being on, so it doesn't actually make contact right out of the gate. Now, you gotta understand the differences in like a regular DC capacitor and a boost capacitor or supercapacitors or whatever. So if you want to take that energy off of that battery, first you gotta have whatever load you got want to connect to it, you gotta have already connected to it before you use the regular capacitors. Otherwise, if you connect it to the battery, and it charges up, it's going to want to discharge instantaneously, and that's where you get that boom in between the doggone, you'll think you blew it up, but you didn't. It's just discharging, because the energy went in and came right back out real fast.
That makes sense.
But a proper switch put on there, a safety switch, so to speak, you got it connected to the battery, you got it connected to the capacitor, you got your load connected to the capacitor, and then you hit that switch, and then everything transitions smoothly across without a sudden surge and blowing your stuff up. So then you take the boost capacitors, which are the newer supercapacitors that you hear about. They act more like a battery. So you take that from the battery to a regular capacitor. That's for quick charge and discharge, and then you take that into a regular boost capacitor bank, which acts more like a battery, and that will give you back your current on the opposite side. But what you just did was you put a buffer with a safety switch in between it so that you're not blowing yourself up with the battery or destroying your capacitors. These capacitors, if you read the voltage rating on there, they can withstand a lot more than you think they can.
Right.
What's happening?
But those acid batteries are, can be temperamental, I've heard. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because, you know, whenever you connect something to it, you automatically start an electrolysis process, which separates hydrogen and oxygen. That's why they used to have stickers on the lead acid batteries that weren't sealed. They had a little vent on them. And that vent was to allow that gas to escape, because otherwise the battery would overpressurize and basically blow a hole in the side of the battery, because hydrogen and oxygen, when they separate, you know, it puts a lot of pressure out. And so you can actually blow a battery up. But in that escape from the vent, if you put a spark down there, you would ignite that hydrogen and get an implosion and get the same exact problem with the potential of battery acid flying in your face. But there are safe ways to connect batteries to capacitors without destroying them. If you go and look into the music industry as far as car audio systems, they'll show you how to hook them in. All right? And they do it all the time. You just got to know what this capacitor is capable of doing and how to safely connect it. So, you know, go out there into the doggone power company and watch these people, how they handle electricity. They know the do's and don'ts. You got to practice electrical safety. You don't want to learn electrical safety by accident. So you got to practice electrical safety. But if you talk about the actual physics of protecting the battery, then you need to understand that battery is not made to do what it is that we're asking of it. It's not made to charge and discharge. We're wanting to make a looping system that will charge itself, but we don't understand that battery and that load that we're trying to do on there, they're sending power back and forth. You're not just putting power to the electric motor. When it gets in that electric motor, it's got to find a place to go. If it doesn't have a place to go, it's going right back into that battery, and now you got two things happening. The battery's trying to push out a load. The other one's trying to use that energy, and what it can't use, it ships back, and so something's got to give. Something's going to get hot. You put a buffer in between there, a place for that energy to go temporarily until it can work its way back into that battery, because voltage is pressure. It will. The higher pressure will always win out. You don't need a lot of current to do what it is that I'm saying.
I like that. I see where you're going with that.
Yeah.
So, I think that these small little battery charging systems are what's going to propel people to kind of get interested in the next levels of free energy, because the different levels are crazy. Like, there's a lot of different techniques being used across the earth to develop what we would call usable power. But, you know, and I love your plasma reactor where you're using the tubes going through the glass with the gas in there. And, like, I think that's cool.
Yeah.
It's just, that's a little advanced for me still, you know.
Well,
wait, so it might be a little while before I get on that. But then again, I might meet the right person down the street while talking about things. That blows glass, that's like, oh, I know a little bit about electricity and I blow glass. I'd love to get into that with you. Sure. I'll help you with that.
Yep. You know, there's a couple technical issues that need to be resolved in order to get that to work, but that technology, look, they made the mercury arc rectifier in the late 1800s, early 1900s, mercury arc rectifier. It was a plasma reactor. Had they'd have known back then what we know now, you wouldn't hear anything about nuclear reactors anymore, because a plasma reactor will put a nuclear reactor to shame. Number one, price-wise, you don't have to make all this expensive, highly radioactive rods that you can only use a few percent of, and then they have to be cooled down for 10 years and stored and are classified as toxic waste. You don't need that with a plasma reactor. All you're doing is taking any of the noble gases and energizing it into plasma state, and that is generating heat. All right, well, how do you boil water? With heat. And you can do it more efficiently with plasma than you can with any radioactive material, because of the cost involved, first off, with the radioactive portion.
Oh, my. Well, I don't think any... I mean, I just heard this fact, and I looked it up. It seemed to be true. It's like, in the process of the nuclear reactors or whatever they're doing with their atomic power, they make the uranium. They do something to the uranium to make it more more nuclear or something, and I guess the amount of chlorofluorocarbons, like CFCs, that are released during that process is like extreme. Like, and it's so interesting that like chlorofluorocarbons have been banned for everybody's use basically in across the board in almost all industries, except for the nuclear industry. They're allowed to make tons and tons every year still, degrading uranium or whatever they do, yeah, enriching uranium.
Well, basically, like, they take the hottest particles and they push them all together, all right? They take all the hottest particles and they push them all together into a ceramic rod. And now this thing is really highly radioactive because it's trying to deplete. Like uranium naturally is radioactive and it is constantly depleting. And it has so many years of lifespan of releasing this energy. Well, in order to get it to boil water, they need it to be really hot. And so they take all these hottest particles, cram them together, and then they make these radioactive rods, and then as these radioactive rods are deteriorating, depleting themselves, and releasing this energy, then they're able to boil the water. And after a certain point, you can't do it anymore. You know, it's not boiling, it's fission enough to keep the steam going necessary to turn the turbines that is giving you the electricity from that plant. But the process of making it and the process of storing the waste afterwards is ridiculously expensive and could be potentially hazardous if you don't do it properly. The reason why they got to leave them in those cooling ponds for 10 years is because they're still hot, and they will be hot for a long time. And until they get to the point where they're not heating the water like they were before, you can't store them in a sealed container. Otherwise, that will boil that water, pressure will expand, and you'll get a hydrogen explosion and spit that material all over the place. So, it's like boiling. Try it sometime. But make sure you stand a mile back whenever you do it. Take a can of pork and beans or your favorite canned goods or whatever that's expired, put it in the bonfire, and just let it cook and cook and cook.
Too dangerous for me.
Yeah, it'll blow up. My wife put some cream corn in the trash, and I was out burning the trash, and then next thing I know, I hear this noise, and I take off running, and I'm being pelted by cream corn. I had cream corn flying past my head, so I call her up on the phone as I'm walking back towards the burn pile, and I said, "Hey, lady, did you throw some can of corn in the trash?" And she said, "Yeah, why?" I said, "Because it just exploded. I got corn all up in my hair." And she's like, "Are you still standing there?"
That's dangerous. You gotta be careful.
I said, she said, "Are you still standing there?" And I said, "Yeah." And I said, "Why?" She said, "Because there's six more cans in there." And no sooner she said that, I took off running, and next thing you know, boom, boom, I got all these cans exploding and corn flying in every doggone direction. I said, "Woman, you're gonna get me killed doing that. Crazy people."
Sometimes people don't like that I burn my trash, but then again, I'd be thinking that I get these pallets so hot, I burn it real hot, there's not a lot of black smoke at all. But then again, it's like, I try not to buy anything, because I've seen these videos of these plants where they make stuff, like stuff we buy at stores in different countries, and you'd be surprised the condition where, like, the stuff, if you will, we buy comes from. And the way these people live in these towns that produce stuff, and like how like the towns are like based around it, there's like, I would see these tanning towns, they're tanning the leather people buy, and it's like their rivers are flowing blue with like caustic and stuff and dye from the tanning. And it's like, oh my gosh, like, hard to believe, like, but then again, you know, burning a little trash, you gotta really weigh what it is your impact is. Like, you either buy stuff all the time, and, or you don't. You either burn your trash or you don't. It's like, the weight of different things, I think, is like, well, people want to talk about their footprint, but I don't think they really look at their footprint fully. It's like every single thing, stuff, has a footprint. And it's like, I don't know if we should be really concerned with that or not, but it's like, I've seen a lot in, on these videos of just like, just the way industry works across the world to produce all the material goods that keeps like materialism alive is like a lot. it's a big industry.
Well, let's just give the devil his due, right? All right, let's say we have a carbon footprint and we need to resolve it.
Right.
We have the technology to engineer garbage disposal units that will turn that garbage into fuel to run electric generators, into fertilizer to fertilize your garden, into different types of gases, or, you know, even to the extent of recyclable, premium recyclables that we could actually make money off of. So you could have a garbage system that whatever you put in there, even if you're too lazy to separate it, right? Even if you don't want to take the time to put the metal in this side and the plastic and the paper in a different slot, we have the technology to engineer a machine that will separate it for us into its prospective elements and utilize those gases that might be created for energy usage or the materials for recyclables. All right, we got the technology to do that, but
I'm sort of reminded of when stuff gets concentrated. Like, so when a lot of stuff is made in one place, it's like hard. It's like if everybody that wanted some leather, like, went to somebody around their area that hunted, and, you know, they tanned a few pieces of leather up at their farm or whatever, it would be a lot less devastational on a place than to make like 90% of the leather.
Yeah.
For, you know, a given area or whatever the statistic may be, a large percentage of the production in one area concentrated, like, has a huge impact on that environmental area. But if everybody just made a little leather across the board with, like, whatever, you know, animals are already in their area, then you got enough leather in the environment didn't have to take like a devastational amount of like caustic and tanning solutions and all that in one location. You see what I mean?
Yeah, well, what we need
that with like fuel manufacturing and refining, like how like, and even like the way fracking is kind of like here in West Virginia, where like even Pennsylvania is a lot better example, and it's like they have like old school gas wells everywhere. You can drive down the road and there are these like 2 or 3 inch pipes that stick out and they go into like a 50 gallon looking thing. There's a couple meters and then that's about it. And like they're everywhere. You can have them like up to like 10, 15 feet from a road. And as long as nobody hits it, there's not going to be a problem. And I've even been back in the country where people hit one four wheeling and like, yeah, it makes a sound like you've never heard. Like when a truck lands into one of those things and rips into it, it starts squealing like the loudest fire siren you've ever heard.
Yeah.
And like people come like from all agencies from miles away, that's for sure, when somebody takes their four-wheeling truck into one of these things. But it's just a part of the way we were collecting gas here for a long time, putting in these gas wells. And now we've moved to like whatever hydraulic fracking or fracking basically. And it's like, these things are extravagant. I mean, these pads are like unbelievable. And it's like, what they're doing is like kind of unbelievable. I know a lot of people that work over there and it's like, it's crazy. And, it's like, what do you need that concentration for? That much in that area? That made it devastational to the environment. Because before, you could run as many of those little gas lines down into the crust as you wanted. But when you go in hydraulic frack, like miles of crust at a time, horizontally, use up. I'm sorry, she says. I didn't mean to drop that bomb on your radio show.
That's all right.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I started talking about fracking.
Well, what we need is organizers and consultants. And we need people to go out and share informational links. If you have companies out there and they're willing to listen, we could show these companies how to actually turn their waste products into a source of revenue. Because everything is recyclable. Everything. This doesn't matter what it is. Every single thing under the sun, every element is recyclable. And so, with that knowledge, you don't have to have, you know, mainstream science to come out there and tell you how this is done or how that's done. We have research capabilities, unbelievable research capabilities that, you know, we have access to. The research that we have access to is incredible right now. We're standing at a crossroads. And so if we want to get real results out there, first, guys like myself need to get to people who have any kind of platform or any kind of funding or any kind of power structure, whatever. People who can get things done. There's movers and shakers in the world, if you understand what I'm saying. And those normally are the guys like Donald Trump who make a lot of money, you know, in real estate and whatever, and become president and all that. Get a guy like me able to talk to him. If he really cares about what it is that, they say we need, to fix things, there are solutions available. But unless they know these solutions, unless the average Joe is aware that these are even possibilities, then what am I doing? You see what I mean?
Yeah, I'm sorry, brother. Feel bad.
Oh, no. Don't worry about it. We'll edit it. It'll be all right.
That's why I got into free energy. I was just passionate about the environment. I just love water so much. I know what water does for everybody. I know that having clean access to it is so huge. It just, for me, the whole thing about energy or anything is just like, just taking care of the earth. It says in the Bible, be a steward of the earth. It says we're supposed to do it. You're doing it. I'm doing it. We're all trying to do it. There's a lot of good people in all communities that want to be local farmers, be into agriculture. They want to eat more local things because they know how important it is, and they don't want chemicals, and it's just going on across the earth. And I'm passionate about it, and I'm frustrated sometimes like you are, because sometimes commercially or industrially we're not seeing the change that the people are asking for. And that's sad. Because you shouldn't blame these people or even the government or anything. We're just not seeing the change that we want. And we have to ask ourselves why, and then we have to do what we can to just be that change. And as long as you keep trying, and as long as I keep trying, and as long as we keep working and doing, then we're fine. And I think we're fulfilling our mission and trying to become peace-loving to everyone. It's like the answer of war is definitely not the answer for anything right now. The answer is going to be sharing information and sharing love and peace with each other. And like, I'm friends with the frackers. Like, I've lost my frustration. I don't honk my horn and like stare at them and whatever when I see them running through the neighborhood just destroying everything. It's like I'm buddies with them now. I'm friends with them. They're doing what they need to do, to what they think they need to do at this time, to be with their families and do what they need to do. And it's kind of lucrative for them, and I'm happy for them. They're having things that they never had before, and I'm proud of them. But I just wish that we would see the change across the board that we want to see with renewable resources, the way you have answers, and many, many people have had answers. And, I am optimistic, even when I get frustrated. And I hate when I let my frustration come through and just like some short vulgarity that affects your radio show, bro. My son, I'm sorry.
It's happening. You're only human, man. Look, I get aggravated all the doggone time because I'm sitting here, I'm seeing that, the fracking industry, for whatever good intentions they may have, those techniques that they use to basically break up the ground are causing problems that, they should have known.
They call them unforeseen consequences, there's no liability because it's unforeseen, but we all know that it's just not a good practice. I mean, I shouldn't ever say we all know, but it's just a lot of people are starting to realize it might not be a real good practice.
Well,
you know?
if you got an area that's prone to earthquakes, that's not where you want to frack. If you got an area that has gas pockets or a water table or whatever, that's obviously not a place to frack. And so there's really no good places to do that, because if you take the hydraulic pressure out from underneath the foundation, then you end up with a house in a sinkhole, and then their way of getting out of it was, like you said, unforeseen the circumstances. It was an act of God. How could I know there's going to be a sinkhole under your house? Well, I guess if you're sucking all the gas or the water out from underneath the land that my house is basically floating on, and I end up in a hole, well, then that means that you did it, I mean, that's common sense. But to that extent, we don't even need to do that. We don't even need to try to get these doggone gases out of the ground, because we know how to make them. We know how to make methane. We know how to make natural gas. We know how to make all of this stuff. And a lot of it stems from plastic, because plastic is a petroleum-based product that it can be turned back into its natural state. You know, you can actually make diesel fuel. You can make gasoline. Anything, any of the fuels that you hear in the so-called fossil fuel industry all came from plastic. It's all a doggone petroleum-based product. So, with that said, you got tons and tons of a valuable resource. If you want to take the time to help nature move it back into its natural state, there's different stages of that natural state. You know, like when you melt the plastic and all the way down, you know, whatever. Different temperatures, different pressures will give you different results, and you actually get a liquid out of plastic, you know, gasoline. And so all the plastic that we've got laying out in the oceans, floating down the creeks, laying in the ditches, and all the plastics on its way out there are all petroleum products that could be refined back into the same fuel sources to run generators and even machinery or whatever. And even on how you deliver this fuel into the engines that you're going to want to run, and you want a clean exhaust coming out the other side, we have the technology necessary to make sure that no crud or so-called carbon emissions even make it out the other side.
You know what's so cool is that you say that? It like reminds me of that Mr. Pantone and the Geek Machine, and how beautiful
it
was. Because, yeah, it didn't really necessarily work for adjusting throttle real easily, and on your riding lawnmower, if you wanted to throttle up and down, you'd have to tweak it or whatnot, if you wanted to run it on coffee or whatnot, but at the end of the day, the fact that, like, putting your exhaust back out through a tube, going in through the intake again, and through a bubbler if you need to, causes, like, all the exhaust to come out, like, smelling, like, it smells so beautiful. It smells like CO2 and ozone mixed together. Like, crisp CO2 and crisp ozone, like, just coming out, like, cold out of that pipe, out of the exhaust. And it's like, it doesn't even matter if it's moving a generator head at that point. It's just the fact that, like, it's coming out, like, in this, I was tempted to breathe it in because it smelled so good. I was like, this feels healthy. I was like, this smells, like, really healthy for some reason. This cold, like, vapor that was coming off that engine. And it just, I don't know, you know, that, I know the technology exists to, like, change the exhaust on everything over, like, there's been a lot of people that have diverted hot exhaust back into their engines without doing it through the iron tubes like Mr. Pantone showed, but just, like, doing that will, like, increase stuff. Like, there's people that do that to their cars, and I hear about them down the shop. They're like, yeah, you can run some of that exhaust back in there. And they're like, some models of cars actually, like, already do that. Like, right when you start them, it runs a little bit of the exhaust up to, like, warm it up at first, and then once it gets warm, it doesn't draw anymore through that or something.
Well,
and, like,
cold plasma technology, there's already prototypes in existence of cold plasma that will take basically, you know, high voltage, high frequency, and break materials down and turn it into a fuel source. So that one little nugget of information right there, along with re-engineering how we inject fuel into a system to begin with, would mean that you would get perfectly clean exhaust out the back. See, the whole thing is, we're not getting a complete burn in these internal combustion engines because of the way that the fuel's being delivered and the decrease in timing of how much time that you have to burn. The harder you push down on the gas, the faster the pistons go up, which shortens the time necessary to get the amount of power that you want out of that machine. So, by rights, the harder you push down on your gas pedal, the less fuel you should be using if you're using it properly. And then, whatever does make it past and out the exhaust can be recaptured through systems that will take whatever carbon may have made it by and turn it back into another useful product. So, the whole thing is, it's not that we don't know how to do these things, it's that the industry and the average Joe probably either aren't aware of it or believe it's too hard or too expensive in order to make these, you know, basically from what I'm saying to actual working prototypes.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's also important to understand with the Pantone invention and why he was, you know, put in a mental institution and they tried to, and they basically killed him over it, is because, like, his device, it didn't only, like, just, like, make it clean so you had, like, a CO2 and water vapor. It, like, because that binds up oxygen, like, free O2 in the air that people are concerned with, allegedly. So it's like, well, his device, like, made, like, O3. Like, it created, like, an ozone that would, like, split, like, into fresh oxygen in the air. So it was making fresh oxygen off the burn, the way I understood it.
Well, the whole thing is, when you're under the petrol dollar, you know, our money's not backed by gold, we're the petrol dollar. That's why they have all these feuds, wars over resources. And who's going to buy crude oil with gold, or who's going to buy crude oil with the petrol dollar? And so that's what the whole scam is. What he showed would have interfered with the petrol dollar, because that means you could take crud and make fuel out of it. And that's exactly what I've been saying all along, is everything's a fuel. You know, everything out there, including water. Water is a fuel. If you understand science and you understand physics and the basic way that science explains of what everything's made out of, we live in a carbon-based world. And water is hydrogen. It's implosive. Water is oxygen, and it's explosive. So there's energy to be extracted. But the thing about water, water's so amazing because water is the most stable molecule on the planet. You can't destroy it. You can get it dirty, but you can also clean it back up. And so we have that technology to be able to not only use it as a fuel source, but while it does its reaction from everything that's going on in this particular engine, it spits it back out the other side. You still have hydrogen and oxygen coming out the other side. And you got water again. Try to destroy water. Anybody out there on the planet, figure out a way to destroy water. You can't. You can get it dirty, and you can also clean it back up. But you can't destroy it. Water is the most stable molecule on the planet. It does not like to be separated. So when you separate it, it releases energy. And in that process, we get work done. But if you understand the physics of it, the basic science of it, water is the perfect fuel. It's the perfect fuel for our bodies. It's the perfect, it's a miracle. Flat out.
I gotta admit though, I mean, all roads lead home, and like, fracking, environmental devastation, all the negatives in life, all the things, like, that's what led me down the path to find the solutions. Because eventually you have to stop being a cynic and complaining and be like, well, I want to ban fracking. This is horrible. We shouldn't be doing this. Like, well, what's the alternative? You haven't offered the alternative. That's what came to me. It's like, you have to offer an alternative. You can't just tell people they can't do what they want to do. That's wrong.
It.
You have to offer them an alternative that's more tasty.
That's
and
why
eventually intelligent people will take that.
That's why I do mad science and not protest. I'm not out there protesting.
I'm not protesting. I don't believe in all that, telling people what they can't do.
What I'm trying to show people is, you say there's a problem, I show you the solution. If you choose to take that information and enact that solution, then you don't have the problem anymore. But if you're continuing to complain about the same exact problem over and over again, no matter how many solutions that I put on the table, then how can I do my job? How can I do my part if I'm trying to sit here and say, look, there's the answer right here. If you don't, not willing to take that or humor me long enough to at least test it, I told a story on the Mad Science Show a while back about an individual who had milling equipment, incredible skills, could build a two-cycle engine From start to finish, he could build the entire motor in his shop. And so I contacted this guy because I wanted to see if I could get him interested in helping me build a prototype of an engine that would run on water, pure distilled water.
That's fuel. I agree. It's got to be. It's the best fuel I can think of.
Yeah, but listen. Because of his education, he completely disregarded every single thing I said, and he did a video called Bollocks. And in this video, he didn't name me directly, but he made a mockery of everything that I said because he didn't understand what it was that I was saying. He couldn't understand it because his indoctrination took over. And all that talent that he had basically went by the wayside. So I won't get this man to be able to help me make this engine to prove or disprove it. Now, had he humored me and we would have went together, I'd have paid him for his time. I'd have paid him for the material. And we would have built the machine, and then we could have decided from that point on whether it did or did not work. But I understand physics. I understand what water can do, and I understand what it can't do in whatever state it is. There is a liquid and a gas state, and even a solid state that have to do with water under different conditions. If you freeze water, it becomes a solid. It crystallizes. If you boil water, it becomes a gas. So water can be a solid, a liquid, or a gas. Water can also be energized into the fourth state of matter because it has hydrogen and oxygen in there. And there are so many different aspects of how, if you properly engineered an engine to run on pure distilled water and you knew the physics of it, it's obvious you could use, water's not, you can't compress a liquid, so you have to do something to that water to make it no longer a liquid. You got to boil it into the gaseous state in order for it to be able to separate easier. Now, water in its liquid form can be used for hydraulics. So you can use that hydraulics just like in fracking. They squirt water and chemicals down inside the dirt to force the ground apart. That's a lot of power. So if you understand water in a liquid form, you have hydraulics. So that could work on your brake lines. If you had stainless steel brake lines and you had water as your source of hydraulic fluid, if that ever was to break for some reason, the seal popped, you wouldn't be spitting hydraulic fluid out on the ground. Instead, you'd be spitting water out on the ground. But nonetheless, when that water is used in one side, it can actually be treated and boiled and turned into a gaseous state, which then in turn could run everything from heating to cooling. And then from that point around, you could bring it back into the liquid state again, refill your tank back up. You could recirculate that water. And then when you wanted to use it for the internal combustion portion of the deal, you start warming that water up, you start heating that water up, you treat the water, and as it's going around through the system, it's going through different stages, and by the time it gets up to the sonic vaporization portion of the engine, and then is finally injected into the combustion chamber that is already preheated to 300 degrees Fahrenheit, the moment that water is injected into there, it has an instantaneous response to that heat, which causes an expansion 1,600 times its volume, slamming that piston down. Then on the upstroke, as that piston's coming up between the heat and the compression, it cracks the hydrogen and oxygen apart, and then when the hydrogen and oxygen separate, they release an electrical charge because water does not like to be separated. It will release energy when it does. And then that energy, that ignition source from the compression and the ignition of the electricity released by that separation instantaneously will ignite the hydrogen and the oxygen, causing another reaction, which is an implosion from the hydrogen and an explosion from the oxygen, slamming that piston down through the deal. Then as the exhaust valves open up and release that gas out the other end, by that gas expanding rapidly out that hot chamber, that hot gas instantaneously causes a cooling effect that then in turn could be used for your air conditioning, and then that that gas recaptured back into a liquid form as it condenses back into water again. So that's the physics of it. Now I defy anyone out there to debunk what I just said, because it's taken every bit of the laws of physics, using them to your advantage with existing technology.
I've heard you talk about this engine before, and I'm just wondering, did you invent that in your brain, or is that somebody already tried that, do you know?
I took every bit of research that I found, and I built this in my mind, and I tried to explain to people how you could actually take induction heating, which basically, if you take a coil and you're putting a current to that coil, it produces a magnetic field, and the magnetic field is stronger in the center, so any metal you put down in that coil will cause that metal to get hot. Stainless steel gets hot really fast because of the type of metal that it is. There are other materials that will get hot, but stainless steel seems to get really hot really fast. So as efficiency wise, if you had cylinders that were made out of stainless steel, number one, the water wouldn't oxidize that metal cause it to rust like any other just straight up iron or anything. And so I took all the knowledge from everything that I had from when I was a boiler technician in the Navy, everything I knew about steam engine, diesel technology, gasoline, internal combustion engines, everything from electricity, all of it. I took a combination of everything that I had researched in hydrogen technology, electronics, electricity, and put that together in my brain and tried to explain to people the possibilities using the known laws of physics, basic science, and everything mechanical that I could muster in order to try to get somebody motivated to at least humor me and build a prototype.
I could see that working.
Well,
would you just build like a straight cylinder to test it? Like just like,
yeah,
like two or three or four or something? Or one cylinder?
We could build a single cylinder engine, and that's what I was trying to get this guy that made the video against me to do for me, because he had the capabilities of running the machines, the mills, and since I don't own mills, but I got the design in my head, and if I can convey this information to him or somebody who has a CAD program that they know how to put this CAD program together, and I can sit there and walk through it with them, say, look, when the valve comes up, it needs to be able to do this, and when that valve goes down, it needs to be able to do that, and, you know, the size, it really doesn't matter, you know, until you get down to whether you want to inject pressure or you want to inject volume into anything. So mechanically, I could sit down there and troubleshoot this while they put it into a CAD program that then in turn could be put on a CNC machine and milled out and then test exactly what I just said to them. It's now a working prototype that is proven. And that CAD program could then in turn have a file that you could open source to the world and show everybody that this does work. So, I'm only limited to what I can do with my hands and my mind. My strength is in what I see in my mind that I'm trying to convey to people. You know, I can't sit there and I can engineer it in my mind, I can explain it the best of my ability, but I can't build it because I don't have the machinery or the knowledge of how to run that machinery or the time to learn how to run that machinery. You know, and people get frustrated with me because they say, well, why don't you just build it? You know, well, I would if I could. Honestly, the plasma reactor that I want to build and the way that I want to build it requires some knowledge of temperatures of glass and temperatures of metal, because if you look, glass has a higher melting temperature than some of the metals needed to use. And so you have to find some way to take and combine those two together in order to, so that whenever you put the metal into the chamber, that it's not destroyed by the temperature of the melted glass as you're trying to put it around it. So there are materials out there that will do the same job, but the reactor needs to be able to be sealed so that it can have a mild vacuum to it, so that it works just like the fluorescent bulb or whatever. But once we got past that little bit of engineering right there, you would have a super efficient machine that could heat water, that could give you visible light, and do a lot of different things, from wireless energy transfer and more. And so I know what needs to be done, but I need those chemists out there, I need those glass blowers, I need those people that have the special skill sets to do what it is that I can't do in the tiny little lab that I got. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
So I'm trying to reach out to find the dream team. I know they exist, but getting them together, there are some people out there who can go and they can motivate people to gather. I don't know how they do it, but they do. There are some people out there who are great salesmen, you know? And I'm not a great salesman. I'm not a great motivator. What I do have, the gift that I feel like I got, is an understanding mechanically of how things actually function. And it's not, you know, using the high-tech terminology. It's using terminology that the average Joe can understand. And so, to me, that's a gift that I'm trying to share with people. But if I don't have a white coat or that degree on the wall, people won't take you serious. And if I don't have money to essentially pay people to do things for me, see, right now, if I was fully funded, like, they sent $50 million to the UN Climate Change Fund to supposedly solve the so-called global warming, which is a lie. But nonetheless, let's give the devil his due. Global warming's real. You need it solved, all right? That $50 million, if you can't solve it with $50 million, number one, you're not trying. Number two, you ain't paying attention at all. Because $50 million would give you multiple prototypes of everything from water treatment facilities, everything to recycling machinery, everything to properly engineered engines, internal combustion engines that use pure distilled water, or any other type of specifically engineered materials to run this engine. You can build an engine to run on anything. All right, anything that's carbon-based can be used as fuel. You can properly engineer an engine that will run on sawdust. You can properly engineer an engine that will run on grass clippings, plastic bottles. Anything that is carbon-based can be turned into a fuel. It can be gasified, it can be liquefied, it can be whatever, crystallized. Once you understand the basic mechanics and the physics of what's actually occurring in any given material or any given process, then you can take that right there and you can specifically engineer fuel source to run this particular engine that was designed specifically for that fuel source, including water. Now, they say water's hydrogen and it's oxygen is a fuel source right there. You need three things to start a fire. You need an ignition source, you need oxygen, and you need a fuel source. All three of which are included in the water molecule. Water is a dipole molecule, which means it has a positive and a negative side to it. When you throw a wave like a microwave at it, it causes that from the peaks to the valleys. The wave is rocking that water molecule back and forth. And the higher the frequency you get, the faster that water molecule will rock back and forth. And at a certain amount, something's got to give. You've got a super high frequency coming at that water molecule. You will instantaneously separate the hydrogen and oxygen on demand and ignite it, getting an implosion from the hydrogen and an explosion from the oxygen, and release electricity all in the same exact shot.
Yeah, that reminds me of this video I've seen a long time ago. I was just, you know, back in the old school internet web crawling, using the web crawler with the old Netscape, you know, and then, you know, be like, seen this video called Exogen, and it was this, like, advertisement from this Canadian company, Exogen.ca, and it was, like, exactly what they were doing. They had, like, they were, like, even pushing it for, like, treatment plant facilities, like, taking raw sewage water and having these plates down in them, and then hitting them, and then you getting on demand what they needed to, yep, to light, you know, burn. And I was like, wow. That blew my mind, and that was a long time ago. I tried to find that website again. I could never find it.
Well, that's why I'm saying that this technology already exists. We have the technology right now to build plasma drive engines, to build, hybrid plasma, internal combustion / electric. I mean, we could take all these combined technologies and make the perfect machines. If you want a powerful motorcycle or a powerful car or a powerful race car, whatever, it don't matter. We have the technology right now to build an electric vehicle that will quite literally exceed 300 miles per hour. Do you need to go that fast? No, but nonetheless, it is there. Heck, the doggone Koenigsegg, it's a hybrid gas electric, and it uses a big old gasoline motor that turns a generator that runs an electric transmission that will take this car, and it's beating every other car out there on the market. All right? And it does it incredibly efficient, and it does it with style. It even looks good. But we can get past even that engine can be improved upon to the extent where you're using cold plasma technology to put a perfect burn on that doggone engine every single time, giving it its maximum amount of power. We got the technology to make tires where they're not degrading themselves and spitting out microparticles of rubber all over the doggone air and everything. We could build, there's no limitations. And that's what I'm trying to say to everybody. That's why I call it mad science. We're here in the year 2019, and we're still talking about plastic trash. And in the movie Back to the Future, I can't remember which one it was, but old Doc Brown comes back from the future to get Marty to tell him, we got to go to the future because there's an issue going on. And so he's in there digging in the trash, putting this stuff down into what they call Mr. Fusion. And Mr. Fusion is now the fuel source for running the time machine. So they sit there and showed you right there on the TV, and everybody else would just think, well, no, that's just Hollywood, you know. You can't really do that. Or can you? Yeah, you can. You can, if you understand what the heck is going on right there. Plasma technology would put nuclear power so far back in the Stone Age it would boggle your mind, and it would have absolutely zero byproducts of anything that would be even remotely harmful to the environment or people. And so if you understood what it is I'm trying to tell you, we should be so much farther advanced right now than what we are, but the industry out there wants to continue to make money. They want to continue to sell you the dinosaur fuel. Even though dinosaur fuel is a hoax. It's not. It doesn't exist. You can make dinosaur fuel out of grass clippings. You can make dinosaur fuel out of your food that you waste and throw in the garbage. You can make dinosaur fuel out of any of the carbon-based life forms on the planet, including yourself. You're dinosaur fuel. If you don't understand that, if you don't understand what hydrocarbon is, your body has oil in it. Your body has water in it. Your body has electricity in it. Your body is a carbon-based life form that is a fuel source. That whole deal about people spontaneously combusting, people didn't realize that what was going on there. It was a malfunction of something in that environment or that person's body that failed and started a chain reaction and set them on fire. So how could somebody burst into flames just inadvertently if
wait,
they
wait, wait a second. She says, I've been wondering about this spontaneous combustion for a while. I used to watch that Unsolved Mysteries and the X-Files and whatever growing up. I'm like wondering about this. So nobody ever talks about this, but it was on TV a lot, like in the late 90s. Remember?
Yeah.
Spontaneous. Now, what is that?
Well, let's first go into electrolysis. What is electrolysis? All right.
So okay.
So you got iron. You got iron, and you got salt, and you got water, and you've got electricity in your body. All right. Now.
Right.
When you talk about doing electrolysis to produce hydrogen for gas usage, well, then you've got to have a little bit of current, you got to have all this, but on a microscopic level, these functions, they still all work the same. So if you got an iron particle in your body, you got a couple iron particles in your body, and there's chemistry in between there that have salt and water, and you have electricity that is being transmitted through that system right there, you have electrolysis on a microscopic, a sub-microscopic level that starts a chain reaction. And so that chain reaction produces hydrogen and it produces oxygen. All you need is some sort of way to ignite that. You see what I'm saying? Well, the next electrical spark that comes in there, boom, you got a fire started. You ever heard that saying, where there's smoke, there's fire?
Yeah.
So your body temperature is at 98.6 degrees, all right? And so it's raising everything up. It's getting molecules going around. So anything that goes above that, you know, like when you're running a fever and your body gets up to 103 degrees, you know, and eventually that temperature will start to cook your brain and you make your brain dead. And then things cease to function. But in the body, the chemistry to start a fire exists right there. And it's happening on a micro scale. So whatever could be potentially going on there, such as maybe somebody lives close to a radio tower that's pushing out some heavy-duty microwaves, that particular wave coming through there could be basically agitating an already existing chemical imbalance in the body that could then in turn start a chain reaction that caused somebody to burst into flames because you got oil in your body. You know?
Well, that's... I mean, that's not crazy, crazy, but I mean, that's wild, you know what I mean?
Well, it's not beyond the realms of possibility.
You know? Well, it isn't.
So, that's why, you know, we have reactions when we get close to heat, you know? Our bodies, it warms us against it. Oh, that's getting too hot. That's going to cause damage. So, we got these pain nerve endings sending signals up to our brain and saying, get back from that, watch out, you know? Or check your foot, you stub your toe. Make sure you're not bleeding or your toes broke off or something like that. You know, your brain's pretty smart. And so inside your body, the chemistry that's going on, the electrical signals that are going to all your muscles that are telling your hands to move, there is a lot of energy going on in your body. A lot of it. And so just like anything, like electromagnetic pulse could, you know, disrupt a motor vehicle or electronics, that those waves outside could also disrupt the human body. You know, you standing in a microwave next to a real close to a radio tower, well, it'll start boiling you from the inside out. Those waves continue to come in, the temperature continues to rise, and something's got to give because everything has a thermal breakdown point, and once you reach that thermal breakdown point, you're going to have a chemical reaction of some sort, depending on, like, I got a lot of grain alcohol in me, I just got to get drunk or something like that. That's one heck of a fuel source. It's like hanging onto a gas can while running around in circles around the bonfire. It's not a good idea. You see what I'm saying?
Thanks.
So you get all these gases building up in your body, and you got all this chemical reaction and electrical impulses happening throughout your nerve endings. All you have is one you know, misfire in the wrong spot, and you'll ignite those gases. You see what I'm saying?
So, well, does that still happen? Do people still spontaneously? I've never heard about that since Unsolved Mysteries in like 98 or something.
Well, I'm sure after there are freak accidents, it's probably not a very common thing, but it's still not beyond the realms of real science or real physics.
It's crazy.
You know?
I just wonder what the real, whether, like, is that like something, there's been so many, how many times it's happened and what the coroner says, you know what I mean? Like, what does the coroner say to that? I mean,
what can they say? It's something that if you don't get down into the very tiny, tiny details of what is chemically going on in any given situation, you won't be able to find out. A lot of the fire inspectors, they're able to basically track a fire from all different points down to one point where it actually started by the different discolorations and the different chemistry that's going on. You can actually see, you can follow that back to the initial source where the hot spot was, and they can determine whether it was an electrical fire or whether it was arson from a chemical or whatever. And so the same thing could be applied in the medical industry for the coroner to be able to take the body and then and you know, do an autopsy to find out where this initially started. Some of which would actually take a lot better equipment than we've got available now to get down into the microscopic level to see what the heck was going on that caused this freaking occurrence. You can start a fire with a radio wave. Right? And so you know, all these conspiracies, which I don't necessarily think they're conspiracies, about people about energy beams that are setting fire to trees from the inside out and starting fires all over the place. Why would they do that? But nonetheless, it's still within the realms of physics. It's still within the realms of science. So if that can be done on a macro scale, it can be done on a micro scale. You can scale
it
up.
Hey, I got to say, I've seen some of these pictures from out west of them fires, and like where they got like all these homes like are like look like they're burnt to rubble, like all the chimneys are like gone and everything is like burnt down, like it looks like a white stain on the ground where like all of like the foundation and this whole house was, and then there's like trees right next to it.
Yeah, then there's something that should be flammable sitting right next to it.
Yeah, I can't understand that at all, other than like, oh my god, like what is going on?
This is why.
Well, she says, I appreciate you letting me. I got to make a run, unfortunately, before you close out your show. I'm just thank you very much for everything, and good to talk to you. And thanks for having a radio show online. That's pretty cool.
Well, thank you, man. And look, I tell you, we got the solutions. The whole deal is, I'm trying to reach out to people out there that, you know, think like me and want to get together and make things happen. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to.
There's a lot of them out there. I know it's true.
Well, I gotta help. I gotta find them. I need people's help to find them. Find me the dream team. Oh man, love you, Ted.
Love you too, bro. Have a good one. Yes, she says. Goodbye, everybody.
All right, so folks, talked about who cares. You know, not my problem. And so, with that said. You know, if you care, help me out. Send a doggone message to somebody. Say, hey, go listen to this guy to talk about something. You know, if they say they got a problem, we have solutions. We honestly have the answers to every single problem that exists out there. And the only way that we're ever going to get them resolved is if you and I do it. You know, Grandpa used to say, if you want something done right, get up and do it yourself. That's the only way to get it done. You know, I want to give the world exactly what they said they wanted. We have the information necessary to give the world exactly what they wanted. And like I said before, it ain't some sort of hoodoo voodoo version of plasma that I talk about. You don't have to love your reactor in order to get it to do what science and physics has already proven that it can do. If you understand the basics of science, if you understand the basics of physics and the basics of mechanics, or even if you don't understand it, but it can be explained to you in such a sense that now you can understand it, then as long as you know that it is possible, then that is valid information worthy of sharing with somebody else out there in this world. And we could do this thing. But it's something that it can't be done by one person. It can't be done by ourselves. We need everyone to get involved and want to solve problems. If there's an environmental concern out there, let's solve it. I mean, it's that simple. If we can't find an answer right now with the access to what we've got before our very eyes and at our fingertips with these networks, you know, I get it. I understand why people wouldn't want to listen to me for very long, because I sound like a loudmouth know-it-all. All right? You know, that's not the point. The point is you had a problem. You said we needed to reduce our carbon footprint. You said we needed clean, renewable, alternative energy, and we needed better storage systems. We got all that. You said we needed ways to purify water so that people could have fresh water to drink. We got all that. It's all solved. It's just waiting, a dinner on the table. It's like waiting like a buffet on the table for the dream team to come together and partake of everything that's been presented. It's that easy. And the moment people, start taking each other serious, the moment people stop looking towards the white coats and the fancy paper on the wall, or the mainstream science guys, or medical industries, or governments of this world, then we will get things done. It's going to be mad science that resolves the issue. It's not going to be mainstream science. It's not going to be Scientology. It's going to be you and me taking everything that we have learned and sharing this information far and wide. Now, if you're listening in via the government or whatever, and you want to still be able to maintain control over this system, you ought to really be listening. Because this is coming. Regardless of what happens, the petrodollar will die. Flat out. It's not going to be able to suppress this information forever. Gradually, little bit by little bit, inadvertently, without even knowing it, the system has given you the answers. And if you are wise enough to pick up those answers and utilize them, you might find out you've already got free energy. But if you're stuck in your indoctrination, such as what you've learned in college, and you think yourself to be so much educated more than the average Joe, you're fooling yourself. And you're cheating yourself and the world out of what you said could possibly, need to be done. If you're tired of fracking, if you're tired of environmental hazards, if you're tired of nuclear fallout or waste or wars and rumors of wars and plagues and famines and pestilence, and let's take all this knowledge that we've acquired throughout the generations of all of our lifetimes combined, we are sitting here with the vast sums of all man's knowledge at our fingertips, and if we don't use it now, who will? It's the year 2019, folks. 2019. By the year 2020, we should have already had everything resolved. We should have been able to uplift every community from every nation from all four points of the compass. And if we don't, then we get what we got. We get what we give. With that said, you know what? I'm going to play that song that Gary picked out again because, man, that seems to fit right in on today's show as well. Folks, you've been listening to the Mad Science Show. If you like anything that you heard here, please share this podcast. This is the only plea that I make every single time that I do this, is share the podcast. If you have a network, please rebroadcast it. There was a bleep word in there that I probably have to, you know what, I'm just going to leave it alone. It happens. People get frustrated. I'm just saying, if you believe in what you heard here, send it on, rebroadcast it, and help me to help the world. Peace and love, everybody. Take care. You've been listening to Mad Science.
I believe that friends should never stand upon an argument. I believe we place your happiness in other people's hands. I believe the junk food tastes so good because it's bad for you. I believe your parents did the best job they knew how to do. I believe that beauty magazines promote low self-esteem.
Give it what you get returned. I believe you can. negates the need to be undressed. I believe that God does not endorse TV evangelists. I believe in love surviving death into eternity. I believe in karma, what you give and what you get returned. I believe you can appreciate real love till you've been burned. I believe the grass is no more greener on the other side. I believe you don't know what you've got until you say goodbye. I believe in karma, what you give and what you get returned.
Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.